Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Jacob's here. Bree's here. Aki's here. How are you three doing?
Better. I'm okay. The Muppet Show.
Oh, the new one?
I watched the new Muppet Show. It was cute.
I heard it was good.
Yeah.
Like, and a lot of people are hopeful that they'll make more.
Yeah.
What's it on?
It's on Disney Plus.
Disney Plus. Yeah. All right.
Sabrina Carpenter's the guest.
I don't care. I don't even know her music. I don't listen to it. I just want to see Muppets. I don't care about celebrities. I just want Muppets.
All right.
And when it comes to Muppets, we are the Muppet Show of video games, which means we have celebrities joining us all the time. And on this week's episode, Brental Floss and Glenn Case are here. Brent and Glenn, how are you two doing?
Great. Does this mean I'm a Muppet? Or
you when could you said be. It's the I figured okay. you were the human celebrity with the Muppets, but do you want to be a Muppet?
Oh, no, that makes sense. I do very much feel like the guest star among Muppets, but I think Glenn probably wants to say hi, too.
Well, yeah, and by all means, I'm thinking that, and hello, I'm a fan of Brental Floss, by the way. Been a fan since Super Mario World. That's one of my favorites is your Satchmo. Good stuff. I was excited to hear that you were going to be on here. But no, I'm an old dude, so I would say that I'd be Waller for Stadler? Yeah. I'd be one of the hecklers. Like,
That would probably Jacob be my role. You and Jacob could be the hecklers. There you go.
See, ooh, there you go.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, amazing.
Well, hey, that's how I sound when I come.
I know.
Wow.
As I shoot kidney stones everywhere.
It's the Muppet Show with jokes about cum. Yay!
You know what the best part about this jizz joke is? It's almost over.
Oh,
and I'm out. Lord. All right, great.
It's been good having you, Brent. Yeah. Nice. No, you were here. You were here. You've been on the show before. You joined us to chat about your first game. Use your words. You have a sequel that came out. Called was Use Your Words 2.
There it is. Yep,
there it is. You got it. It's like a sequel. What is going on in the sequel? For the people who don't know what Use Your Words is, give us the sales pitch. What is this game, and why should we be paying attention to it?
Okay, cool. So, you know, I bet a lot of your listeners know about MAGFest. That's, I think, where you and I have spent the majority of the time we've spent together in the same room. So, it's MAGFest 2015. And it's very cold. We literally snowed in. My Greyhound back to New York was canceled because of the weather. So I just crash in somebody's room Sunday night, and they're playing this thing called the Jackbox Party Pack. And, you know, we played Fibbage and whatnot. And so if you don't know what that is, I'm sure most of you do, but it's a kind of a board game or a parlor game you play on your TV with a console or PC, but your controller is your phone. You're using your browser like an app to input stuff. You can draw stuff, you can type stuff. And when I found out that that was a possibility, that technology existed, I was like, oh my God, I could make like the ultimate fill-in-the-blank comedy game I've always dreamed of. So I hooked up with a friend of mine named Julian Spillane, veteran developer, now even more veteran developer 9 years later. And we put an idea for a game together that basically was going to be along the lines of a Jackbox, along the lines of a Cards Against Humanity or an Apples to Apples. But the hook is it's really about your sense of humor. Really early on, we were in this like tequila bar in Astoria, Queens, New York. And I was like, what if we said like the party game for funny people and their unfunny friends? And that's kind of the idea. It's like a game that you know, makes it easy to be funny the way that around your best friends, you can just be funny without actually having to work that hard. So there's different fill in the blank type games. There's a game called Sub the Title, and you see a foreign film clip. And you see typically one line of dialogue that's subtitled, and then the next line is missing the subtitle. Who gets to fill that in? You, on your phone. And then your answer shows up on the TV along with everybody else's answer. They kind of show one after the other. And hopefully you laugh and you vote for your favorite one. The people that get votes get points. So, yeah, the first Use Your Words, which came out in 2017 when we were all babies, had four mini games.
Four times.
Yes. Oh, my God. Before multiple things. But after, forget it. Let's not do that. The point is, yes, the before some things. Anyway, but yeah, so Use Your Words was fun, and we like patched it with a little bit more content, and we added some French language compatibility. But I always kind of wanted to do a little more with it. So okay, that's Use Your Words 1. And in very, very, very late 2024, Use Your Words 2 released for PC and Mac, but it's actually only been out on consoles for like a little over a month or two, depending on which console. So what's different about Use Your Words 2? Well, instead of four minigames, there are 8 minigames, and it's kind of just different ways to do the same thing. The first game had like a fill-in-the-blank machine and a write-a-headline or a caption for a picture, and kind of a silly family feud where it just prompts you to write something like, hey, make up the name of a Hobbit porn star. And so, see, it's funny, right? I worked really hard for that.
That really is the best thing I could say about your game compared to others is I know how fucking funny you are. So I know how fucking funny the game is going to be. And some other games that try this, they just don't have the humor that Use Your Words has because of, you know, people's humor is different, and your brand of humor like is same wavelength of fucked up as mine. So
well, thank you. And here's the funny thing about it is a sense of humor, but it's kind of like in reverse. It's kind of like what would be a hollow shape in which somebody could put their sense of humor? You know, like maybe you wouldn't normally think of that as a bit, like a Hobbit porn star. But if it's suggested to you, well, now pretty much everyone in the group is thinking something. And that's kind of like the ideal Use Your Words prompt. Although we do have a family mode that doesn't have the suggestive prompts, but you get it. So yeah, Use Your Words 2 has twice the number of mini games. There's one where you like make up funny product names for like vintage ads. There's one where you why did I not like go through these in my head? There's one where there's like crazy trivia questions that are fake, and you write funny answers to the fake trivia questions. Like, this microwavable burrito was banned in the United States for its offensive name. You know, like that kind of thing. It's not real trivia, but you write an answer that's funny, kind of like Fibbage or Balderdash. You've also got, well, I don't have it in front of me, but the point is twice as many games. There's also gizmos, which are some power-ups that let you do things like if you really think your answer is going to be funny this round, you can double your points, but only for that one round, and you can only use a gizmo once. We've got a spectator mode where up to 1,000 people can play along in ways that are much more developed and deep than the first game. Like you can take points away from players, give extra points to players, and answer trivia questions and answer little superlatives like everybody votes on like which is the cutest player, or you know, maybe the next round, the next match, it's like which player is the most likely to wear underwear on their head, and you know, so the spectators get to do, there you go, everybody's got an opinion.
Beware the house answer, though, the dreaded house answer.
Oh,
that is a great point. I'm wearing underwear in the first place.
But that is a great point about the house answer. That was a pivotal moment in development where we realized that. I don't know how exactly we came to it, but it just became clear that if we had an extra answer in each round that we wrote that was normally pretty funny, that would make the game funnier. Then it became clear, oh, we could make it where you get a penalty if you vote for it. That could add a chaos element. Then we realized after a while the game theory of the game is such that the house answers make the game funnier and they let unfunny people win more often because sometimes people are a little bit skeptical of super funny answers and will spread the points around. So, yeah, the house answers are kind of a signature element of the game and we write them to really fool you. The second that you think you know, oh, this is definitely the house answer, there will be one that will fool you and sometimes it'll seem like almost like we're listening to your conversation because the coincidence will be just way too uncanny. And that's because we write three percenters, which is like house answers where only 3% of the population would even get this. But when you see it, you think surely it's Joe. Surely that one is Glenn. exactly. And it creates
one of my favorite
moments.
Bits. Yeah, I love the house answer. I think it's one nice twist.
Thanks. Played the other night. And the one house answer that got, I believe, everybody had a typo in it.
Yep.
An intentional final character typo.
Yep.
You do that. Mean son of a bee.
Yep. So funnily enough, when you're waiting on the next thing to happen and your phone is, you know, doing that little loading thing, at the bottom of the screen, you'll see tips and tricks and stuff. And one of them says that sometimes the house answers have bad grammar or misspellings. And the word grammar and the word misspellings are both misspelled.
Oh, jeez. Is it ER grammar?
I think that's what we did. Yeah. Yeah. I'm in an interesting place with the game because it, you know, the ports were worked on all year and I worked on French language compatibility early in 2025. But, sorry. I thought somebody was knocking on my front door. That was scary. Anyway, just an upstairs neighbor. But yeah, so like I have been more playing it than making it in the past year. And it's funny how putting on my developer hat, it's like, oh yeah, I think I made this game actually.
I am having a very good time with it. What are the key differences between the first and second? What is there in the first that you won't find in the second?
I will answer one of those, even though I'm not the one who made it. But I love the custom match order is one of the things now to where you can choose favorite games. Like you can say, I really like this game, so I want to play this one more than once. You can pick from the 8 games that exist and put them in any order that you want, including, I believe you can say, I only like this game, so we're just going to play nothing but this game. That's an option.
Yeah. That's called the machine is the Mix-O-Matic. That's called mix and match mode. But yes, I appreciate you pointing that out. We know that like from the first game, you know, people like to compare Use Your Words to Jackbox because they don't have a whole lot of frames of reference. It's not a very big genre. Like there's not that many party games that use a phone for an input and everybody gathers around a console or a PC. There's like What the Dub. I think there's like a Rift Tracks game and a couple other things, but it's pretty small.
I think you guys opened that door. I think you guys opened that door. For unless I'm mistaken, aren't you guys the first ones to do one that wasn't Jackbox?
As far as I know, yes. So like we tried to be different enough that it wasn't, I mean, it's kind of like the curse of the first other thing. You know what I mean? Like whatever the first side-scrolling game was, the second one was a Mario-like. Now you wouldn't call a side-scroller a Mario-like, but when there was only Mario, you get what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, we made Mix-O-Matic and we made the mix and match mode because some people didn't like feeling so boxed in by having to do the exact same order every time, but you know, we worked really hard to figure out, like, what length of game feels right? What length of the timer feels right so that people won't be anxious? There's, like, a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes to make sure that anxious players or people that are sure they're not funny actually forget all of that by the second or third round and they're just in the game. And there's a lot that goes into that. So, like, you know, sometimes people will be like, well, why aren't there seven or eight players? And it's like, oh, because actually you think you want that, but you really don't want to watch eight or nine movie clips in a row. Like, you'll get bored, and then the people at the end, their answers will be given short shrift. Things like that. So we wanted to make it where, kind of like Jackbox, you have a little more freedom of what you're going to play when, and a little more variety, but while also keeping it a use-your-words experience, which is its own thing. Hello?
No, I think that's perfect.
I didn't know if anyone else had anything to say.
Well, I did pull up the eight games, too, and the eight games within are the blank... something. Blank-O-Matic, Book It, Extra Extra, Letterheads, Sign Me Up, Sub the Title, Out of the Question, and Survey Says.
That's right. And the two I couldn't think of that are new in Use Your Words 2 are Sign Me Up, which is basically different kinds of signs or surfaces that could be written on or typed on or scrawled on are shown on screen. And you know, a good example of one is this guy with, like, this vaguely creepy guy with this kind of like trailer, and the wall of the trailer folds out like a Murphy bed. So he's just outside with this trailer open with this bed kind of hanging off of it. And there's a sign in the foreground. Does the sign say free foot rubs? Does the sign say, who knows what it says? You write what it says. And also there's, as Glenn mentioned, Book It, where you get a weird blank book cover and you write the title. And usually the book covers are trying to be fairly evocative of various things to pull funny answers out of you. Like, for instance, a woman who looks like she's having a great time, but she's in a hospital bed, a doctor faced away from her, and he seems to be gasping like he just realized something very wrong happened. And it's a blank book cover. What's the title? So, yeah, that's those two were the missing mini games I hadn't mentioned yet.
So what would the house answer be on that hospital one?
Now I know where I left my watch.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Or, I mean, there's that, you know, sometimes we try to write them with, you know, kind of different voices, different slang. I will say, when extremely vile Gen Z people play the game, they know when it's a house answer way more often, because I've watched them stream, you know, like, the stuff they're going to answer is just not what's in our house answer. So as much as the first game, I was like, this game's for everybody, you know, and any marketer will tell you nothing's really for everybody. I'm now realizing that the game is really for, like, older Gen Z to, like, Gen X. Boomers love it, but they don't have a game console. And I'm just going to tell you, Newton's fourth law of physics is boomers will never sign up for Steam. They'll tell you they're going to. They'll tell you they know how. They'll tell you they're good with technology, but they just cannot complete the process of signing up for and purchasing a game on Steam. The one who ever did, I won't out him. I swear to God, he buys Use Your Words 2, and then he tells me, hey, they never sent me my game. You got to be careful with these shady game companies you're working with. And I was like, you got to click the library tab. And, you know, and we take that for granted.
Install.
But yeah. Yeah. So, like, that's your new thing you learned today, is that, you know, an object in motion stays in motion and boomers cannot figure out Steam.
The server itself, is there anything you've done as far as future proofing it or whatever down the line? Like, how long will this game work?
That's a great question. I mean, we use Amazon hosting, and it's just, I'll be honest, as the designer, head writer, creative director side guy, I'm not up on that to the point where I could really speak intelligently. But what I do know is, we use Amazon hosting, and I don't know that it's future-proofed beyond, like, well, let me ask you this, Glenn. paint me a picture of what could happen, and I will guess fruitlessly at how we would fix it.
10 years down the line, does the server still exist?
Probably. Probably. But
the first one is still going, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that... I think that there's an based on what I've heard my programmers say, it is in some way automated. You know, this is not we're not like dealing with physical objects in our home, you know, but that's probably not what you mean either. So, yeah, I think that it's probably in good shape. The only thing I think that would really, you know, aside from something cataclysmic, like wherever the Amazon hosting is, blows up, you know, I don't know, all the internet satellites blow up, I think we're set. But again, I wish I could speak more intelligently about that, but it's one of those things where with such a small team, we all kind of like wear a bunch of different hats, and none of my hats are the programming or back end side, I'm sad to say.
Hey, no worries. That is 100% fair. It's just, it's something that I've thought about with Jackbox, too. I mean, I think Jackbox, they've got enough of a thing going that they're probably going to keep that up forever and all of that. But it's exactly what you pointed out. With being a smaller team, it's a matter of how long does it become worth it for you guys to keep it rolling? And you know, and I guess it's a matter of how many sequels that you make and like how much work. But if a lot of it's automated, I imagine that does help as well.
Well, that's a great question. You know, this is kind of very pulling back the curtain, and that's usually my style as a human being, so let's think about it. The thing is, right now, it costs a significant but not huge amount of money to pay for our Amazon hosting each month, and the Amazon hosting is based on how much data goes through, you know, like, essentially from the phones to the internet to the console or whatever you're playing it on and back. And so we have to pay that every month. And if there came a point where so few people were buying the game that we were making less than we were having to pay for hosting, that would be a situation in which we might have to think, like, do we want to sunset one of these? Luckily, it really, you know, like, we don't have to sell that many copies per month to keep that going. But I think that's the only real threat I can imagine. And even then, we would probably just sunset the older one. But I don't really, at this point, I don't, as much as you use your words, one is increasingly a product of its time, by which I mean I started writing it in 2015 and it came out in early 2017. There's a certain naivete about it based on all the things that have happened since then. I think that it will probably keep selling in the way that, I mean, geez, I'm in a phase right now playing the old Thief games, Thief 1 and Thief 2, but actually a bunch of fan missions. And like, sometimes Thief is on sale on Steam for like 99 cents. It's, you know, if you don't remember it, it's clunky, it's, you know, old and very like of its time, but people will still buy it. So as long as anybody's still got any interest in this game, we will keep the servers up. But that doesn't mean we don't have some ideas about possible potential new things that could or could not make more money for us to keep those hosting fees paid. Who can say?
Very nice. Well, and I'd say that you probably have an advantage in this case where it is, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe all of the games are text-based as far as the answers are text. So, like, you're not having to worry about, like, something that takes up a whole lot of space because it's just, you know, text takes, like, no data at all.
That's right. And I think that that became at a certain point kind of a brand, not quite a North Star, but like it conveniently fit in with the brand of use your words. At some point, people were like, oh, you could upload a picture or, oh, you could upload a noise. And it's like, yeah, but, you know, not only would that make the hosting just through the roof because of the additional data as compared to, you know, really just typing, as you say, just text. But also, it's use your words. And
use your pictures.
Right. And I'll be honest, I have ideas for similar games in a, quote, Jackbox-like format that could mix that up a bit and not just be words. But I feel like Use Your Words benefits in multiple ways from just, you know, the limitation, the self-imposed limitation of one way or the other, people are typing in some kind of text. And that is their input into the game. That is the mechanic that they do at its core.
Love that. Thank you.
I will be honest. Whenever I see Jackbox games or party games that have an art element, I turn away. Like, I can't draw. I have no interest in drawing. I would rather stick to word games.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Drawful, I think Drawful was the first time that there was a Jackbox-style game that had that kind of input. And they were smart to make it where, even though it is an image, I think at that time it was only black and white. So it's still, like, not that much data, really. But it is interesting. I feel like I am not much of an artist, and I wonder if the fact that I am so much about words, like, you know, what was my brand before that? Lyrics. What if it had lyrics? Even though it was so much music, but what was, you know, my YouTube brand that was the uniqueness of it was about lyrics, i.e. words, 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 words. And so I wonder sometimes if I departed from that a bit and tried to make things that really weren't as much about the words, particularly in a video game milieu, would I fail? Because I'm just about the words, baby. I don't know.
Go with what you know. Thought. Go with what you know.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. I really wish I could pitch my big other game idea, but it's so long before I'll probably be able to do it that I probably shouldn't. You know, there was a time when people would say, oh, don't worry that somebody's going to steal your game idea. But I got to say, like, I think it's so easy to make games now. Like, I'm not interested in using AI code, but if I pitched y'all a game thinking, yeah, maybe in the next few years, I'll do that. Like, someone could just hop on their, I don't know what they use, Claude or Google, whatever, but like, just tell it, hey, I want, right. If that, you know, that's a whole different conversation. But the point is, just know I'm itching to pitch and I shan't. Sorry.
Here you go. Hey, that, again, to me, that makes sense. But Use Your Words 3. Is that maybe in the works?
We'll see about that. The thing is, Use Your Words 2, well, let's rewind. Use Your Words 1 really was a labor of love. Use Your Words 2 was more of a labor of labor. And it is closer, I think, to the original vision. Like, there's some guy that worked on the game Portal and Portal 2, and he had some kind of quote, I think in a GDC keynote, where he said something like, typically, the first game in a series doesn't fully capture the vision of the designer, or something like that. And I went, oh my God, that is so freaking true. I printed it out and it was like taped to the top of my monitor for a while. Use Your Words 2 is much closer to the original vision. I think for Use Your Words 3 to happen, it would just need an idea that really truly added something new. That's not to say that Use Your Words 2 isn't new compared to Use Your Words 1, but it's like if we doubled the number of things you can do, then allowed you to remix it into whatever order you wanted, and, you know, tripled and quadrupled the number of things you could do in spectator mode, and added the depth of power-ups that you can use, you know, like, during the game to add depth there. That, to me, justified a sequel. The question is, what justifies a 3? And could we ever get the budget to do it? Like, there's all these ideas we had to leave on the cutting room floor. One of the big ones, and wow, I'm really, like, you know, like, bringing up a lot of big topics tonight and not really worrying about them because they're too big, but one thing okay, with no these games is perfect. One thing with these games is that a surprising number of people will say, yeah, but I have no friends, and they're not kidding. they mean they do not have anyone to play these games with. And, you know, probably if they got a few people together on Zoom, did a screen share, it would be fine. But that has bugged me for, you know, 10 years now. What do you do about those people? Is there a way to, without AI, create the illusion that you're playing with different personalities that if you play enough, you could get to know? And you could be like, I think that's a house answer because I think that's what so-and-so would write, but they're not real. Would it be worth going out of our way to make a whole part of the game that's actually for one or two players instead of minimum three? Maybe. There's various things that I think could revolutionize, or a better way to put it would be that could be a leap ahead, for use your words, as a concept. The question is, would we be able to do that, considering Use Your Words 2, for various reasons, took 6 years, as opposed to Use Your Words 1 taking 2 years? Is it possible? Never say never. But with the resources we have at hand, it's currently a toss-up. I will say this. We just got picked up by this company called Game Loop. This is such a strange thing, and I'll be honest. Julian, my partner on the project, really headed this up, and I kind of just got, you know, like, I've been on the sidelines a bit. We're partnering with a company that's going to put Use Your Words 2 on smart TVs.
Ooh.
And
ooh. Okay.
I don't really know that much more about it. The business model is a little different. And listen, I am not trying. Let me rephrase. I had no personal plans to play video games on a smart TV. But
that seems like a boomer thing, though. That might be how you get the boomers. They don't need Steam.
You were right there with it, Glenn. That's exactly right. When I try to tell boomers who love it, you know, my ex-girlfriend's parents loved it. Now my current girlfriend's parents love it. My parents love it. My aunts and uncles love it. They'll never get it. They'll never get it. Not on Steam. They don't have... My mom's got a Wii. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what she's working with. So, like, it's the kind of thing where could that be the way the boomers can get into it? And not just boomers, but, like, if that's the way people want to play, great. I don't know a whole lot about it, and I'm certainly not trying to, like, you know, I want this company to feel that we're excited, and we are. It's just that I'm excited in kind of like a, yeah, who knows what that could be like, because this is a sort of a new idea for me. But let's just imagine a world in which it explodes. We were on the frontier of a new thing. We're millionaires. Well, yeah, Use Your Words 3 is probably going to happen because we'll have, like, you know, hopefully 10 or 20 people to make it happen really quick. We'll have a little Willy Wonka lab of people going, hey, what about this? What about that? Wouldn't that be cool? Ooh, hey, you go try that and come back next week. As opposed to what we did have for Use Your Words 2, which is me and 1.5 other, like, you know, regular people on the team. It was a smaller team than Use Your Words 1, making a bigger game. So yeah, I would love to make Use Your Words 3. I do have ideas for, you know, we have mini games that were just a little bit too complicated to put together with our team size, various elements and mechanics that just seemed a little bit impractical to figure out. And, you know, a lot of this stuff is like, you want to feel strongly that you can execute on your ideas. And if you realize that an idea is so, like, it's so unknown that you might get mired in it and do 5 times the work on it to make it fun, and it's actually still not fun because it was an experiment, you know, you maybe cut that till you had the bigger budget. But this is an extremely long answer to a very simple question. That's my style. But I think Use Your Words 3 would be really cool, or Use Your Words, you know, Use Your Words presents colon something else. We're just going to have to see. What I do know is that I have a lot of content that it's funny, like the Use Your Words 2 had a lot of difficult parts of it, but every now and then, by that I mean the making of it, but every now and then I don't know what to do with my day. I work at home and I'm juggling all these different things all the time. And sometimes I just decide, you know what? I'm going to watch one of those random movies I found and, you know, pull out some subtitle clips. You know what? I'm going to go through that stock photo site and see if I can find anything for the future. And I just kind of, you know, hoard all these things like little squirrel nuts. And so DLC is possible. We don't have a plan yet, but we're just still seeing, considering the fact that, like, again, pulling the curtain back, the major video game platforms don't pay you until sometime after your first dollar was made. So, like, we came out with the Xbox port in November. We still actually haven't received funds from Microsoft representing that. Ugh. So I believe that's coming this month. But the point is, we're still kind of finding out, like, how's this game doing? Steam is one thing, and, you know, like, it's moving along. But as you can imagine, if you're just on Steam, but your first game was on Steam, Switch, Xbox, and PlayStation, then, and Wii U, actually, the first one. But unfortunately, we can't be on the Wii U again.
Yeah, you got to back down to the Wii. Got to get those kids back.
I mean, honestly, that would be, if we have enough money ever that I could just say, and you over there, put it on the Wii, I guess, then we'll be doing pretty great.
There's a lot of senior citizens that bought that so they could bowl.
Man, if they could just, now here's
bowling
the thing.
And dick jokes, that's all they need.
Bowling, but also what's great is any browser-based input device works, so the seniors with their tablets. Isn't it funny? I don't know if you find that, but like old people these days are getting tablets more than PCs, yes. And so yes, are yeah. young people. So like
that's what my mom did. It's weird as shit.
Yeah,
Yeah, and she was like on the cutting edge of computers when they first came out because of her job, and now she wants nothing to do with them. She just has a tablet, but she loves playing games like this too. So I love the TV idea.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I mean, here's the thing, like my girlfriend's parents do not understand why it's not on the iPad. And it's like,
yes, which is what my mom's on. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, you know, explaining that is kind of, you know, it's a long thing and a short thing. The short thing is it's too small for everyone to gather around, but really the big question is like the fact that they don't have a PC at all is this big generational difference. But if they had it on a smart TV, now the tablet becomes the input device. Funny story. I got one of those crappy Amazon Fire tablets like years and years and years ago. And this was for the first time that I was going to show my parents the like nearly finished beta of Use Your Words 1. Now, my dad, his phone, there was some issue. He wanted to play, but his phone was unavailable for some reason. I forget. But I was like, I just got this new tablet. So this, you know how like how predictive text was like new at some point in the past? My dad taught this tablet so many weird my dad-isms that when I got the tablet back after hours of playing Use Your Words 1 around Christmas time, it was like suggesting words in the predictive text like nut lick and like squirrel monkey and like, you know, my dad's like a strange guy with weird like catchphrases and stuff. You can imagine somebody who spawned me having a bunch of like kind of built-in stock jokes and weird kind of quirky things. But yeah, so for a while there I would still see the evidence that my dad had used the tablet when I would be typing on, and the predictive text would put in something like, I don't know, spider monkey. My dad's a strange guy.
That was mine. I love strange dads. Jumping back quite a bit, Use Your Words 1. You mentioned that you tried to do that for like an all audiences kind of thing. And if I remember right, didn't that release with a T rating?
Yeah. So the deal with that was there was a time when you had to like send your game off and they would rate it the way that the MPAA rates it. But by the time we were making Use Your Words 1, you just fill out a little form with tick boxes. And, you know, does it have cigarettes? Does it have drugs? Does it have gore? Does it have blood? And we ticked the boxes, and they, based on our tick boxes, said it was tea. And I guess there were, like, just enough house answers that had, like, actual hard R, as in hard R rating, words. Phew. That they were like, they retroactively changed it to M. And that's part of why Use Your Words 2 is a little bit dirtier when you don't have family mode on, because if it's going to be M anyway, let's at least have some fun with it, you know? Yeah.
So since you're talking about family mode, that was one of the things I wanted to ask about. How clean does it get with the family mode filter?
Well, it's kind of like this. Like a lot of the answers. Okay, so to start with, the game has prompts and the game has house answers. The prompt is come up with a funny word for this, and the house answers are, you know, a built-in answer that you don't know is actually written by the game. Okay, so now that we figured that out, there are certain suggestive prompts, like make up a porn star hobbit, or you know, make up a new Australian word for butt cheeks. Like, that one's not super offensive or adult, but you probably wouldn't, like, necessarily, the people that are going to turn on family mode might not want that one to show at, like, mixed company Thanksgiving party, right? Yeah. So basically, we filter out the prompts that are suggestive, and then filter out the house answers that have basically anything in them that would be any kind of, like, you know, I mean, anything that would even be considered like a hard PG. There's no shit, there's no ass, there's no fart, there's no religion, there's no politics. But there's still actually quite a bit of comedy in the game that happens without ever going there. A good example is, like, somebody asks a question in a, you know, sub the title clip, and the answer is like a really long, rambling, just rat-a-tat-tat of syllables. But the person, you know, the human player writes the answer, no. And the joke is, that's way too many syllables for the word no. Well, that would be a perfect family-friendly, family mode, you know, enabled answer. So we basically make sure that for every single prompt that has, okay, let me figure out how to say this. For every single prompt that is more or less family friendly, we make sure and have at least 7 family friendly house answers. Okay. Because if we are playing family mode and everybody chooses the house decoy, meaning they're going to use one of the house answers for themselves, you need to have all 6 of them have a house answer to use, and the game's house answer. So basically, we write a bunch of house answers that, you know, things can be pretty devious without being, like, without crossing the family friendly line. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm looking forward to the You Have No Friends mode. That will be great fun.
Yeah, you know,
I could hear voice actors too, where you act like 3 characters that are just, like, hanging out and, like, oh, how's your day gone?
Yeah, well, I mean, we really, you know, we gave it some thought, and there's also the idea of a you know, meeting halfway between what we have now and what somebody might need for that, which is like a practice mode where you've got, you know, like, your name on one of the tickets, and then player 2 and player 3. And they're all playing house answers.
That's smart.
Yeah. I mean, it's a thing we could do. To me, it's hard for me to imagine playing the game with you for that experience. But the answers are still funny. and you can still make yourself laugh. So maybe there are people that would do that. I think the game would just have to transcend its current level of popularity and hit a spot where it's like, okay, now let's like actually, we have a certain level of either cachet or budget to really play with some interesting ideas. That would be the point at which to do that. But maybe the takeaway is that a future game that's a different brand, a different IP to make would be one where it's like, hey, what if Couch Co-op didn't need other people?
Or you have it to where they're the audience, to where, like, you know, actual people might still vote on your thing, where it's like public games.
Sure. Well, and the nice thing about Use Your Words and Use Your Words 2 is that they can very easily be streamed or screen shared, so that, and you probably already know this, but like if you want to play by yourself but have people watching, that's available. The question is how to make the illusion that other people are with you, or not require the illusion at all, but still be playing a game that is built on a structure that mimics a sort of like party game couch co-op thing. I don't know how you'd do that, but it would be interesting to explore.
Here is a question for you. The game right now features a streamer mode, which gets rid of copyrighted audio, so there's no kind of copyright flags, and it extends the timers. Can you make those individual options to just extend the timers but not mess with the copyright stuff? Because I don't keep VODs, and I want to have like everything the game has to offer, but I still want to have extended timers for playing on Twitch.
Well, the answer is we totally could make that two different features. Basically, when you're like me, so okay, there's like two kinds of devs. There's the kind of dev that always thinks of MVP, minimum viable product. Like, how can we do this the simplest way? Let the player figure it out. Just get it. Just ship it. Just get it out there. And then there's devs like me that are like, what if we give them so many bells and whistles that the settings menu looks like a 1983 mixing board? and it's like there's a balance, right? I totally hear what you're saying. For me, I will stream and just let people deal with the timer issue because I prefer the main soundtrack so much. That's not to say that the royalty-free soundtrack is bad, but it's like I found and fell in love with the main soundtrack way before toward the end of the development cycle, where we were like, oh yeah, we got to go and find some like royalty free stock music to like make the game feel fun but also not get people content ID'd. So yeah, I think that that's a very good idea, and I am for the moment going to add it to, it's not a pile, Joe, but it is a stack. It's a very neat, very tall stack of great ideas that people including me have had.
What other great ideas, right, and feedback have you gotten?
Oh, it's a lot of stuff like that where people go, hey, wouldn't it be better if you made this like this? And it's like, well, yes. Yes, it would. Next question. let's see. People always want to be able to do more as spectators. And the thing about spectator mode, like they want to be able to actually like write stuff. And part of spectator mode, what's tricky about it, and really what's a tricky thing about the entire game, is the more anonymity you have, in a way, the more kind of like loose cannon power you have. A good example of that is that if you're doing a stream and someone you don't know is watching and they start just dropping totally vile jokes that like you don't even want to have on your stream, but you don't like know which person it is. We've had people go, why can't you boot people? Why can't you like ban people?
My question. Because I'm a streamer who's had really bad experiences with stuff like that. So I was going to ask what kind of protections you have for that and what you're doing for that.
Yeah, well, so like in a perfect world, you would be able to say, hey, this person's a jerk, you're banned forever, or like the way that you can ban somebody from a chat. Mm-hmm. But if somebody's in the chat, it's because they've logged in.
Right.
And with this game, if we made it where you have to log in, then there would be so much friction to starting a game of use your words or use your words too. And we would have to figure out an entire login process. So that was kind of out because it's already kind of a big lift for people that have never played a game like this. Getting everybody, wrangling all the cats, getting grandpa to face the TV, hold his phone up, enter his name. And so Derek, one of our programmers on Use Your Words 1, had the pretty smart idea of, what if we just allow the players to make a custom password and they can, you know, like tell only who they want what the password is. Now, here's the thing. That is not as precise as being able to boot people. But, you know, at a certain point, if somebody's going to stream a game for lots of people and let those people join in, it's a risk you run. And I agonized about this with, by the way, I should say, Use Your Words, the first one, was my first ever game to be a dev on. And Use Your Words 2 is my second and only other game. So I learned a lot across this process, and I would agonize with Julian about certain things. Like, for instance, if you really were like trying to win at all costs and like do every single little thing you could to get an edge, you would vote for a house answer as often as you could. And you would, just in terms of game theory, you would never vote. You would run out the clock when it's voting time. You don't get penalized for not voting. And the timer will eventually run out and the game will move on and nobody will get the points your vote would have given them. That really bugged me in the development cycle of Use Your Words 1, but we couldn't find a way to fix it. And Julian was like, look, man, you can write out the perfect instructions for Monopoly and you can like make, you can go over the rules and the game design over and over again to make it as good as you can. But nothing you do once that box is shipped out is going to make it where somebody can't flip the table over when they get pissed off, or going to make it where people won't cheat or be assholes. Your game cannot un-asshole people. So
that's true.
It is. I do wish we had a more robust way to protect the person who's wanting to play it in kind of like a streamer setting, or even a we're not in the same room setting, you know, remote screen sharing on Zoom, that kind of thing. But the password is about the most elegant thing we figured out without having to add the friction of a login system or a token system, which would, I think it would just, it would solve a certain number of problems, but add so many more.
This might take a lot of extra work and effort, but have you considered adding, I don't want to say AI characters that just put like random answers, but like get in touch with someone like Mustin and give him every prompt in the game and get every answer from him and have him be a character that could be in the game.
Like, so this is an idea that definitely,
like, oh, I need a stand-in character because we only have two people playing.
Yeah, this is an idea that's been bandied about. Like, if the game had just explosively blown up, one thing, and by the way, I'm not disappointed with how it's done, but, you know, like, not all games are going to be Balatro. And, however, when you're Balatro, or Balatro, as I actually pronounce it, even though it's wrong, Balatro got to suddenly have partnerships with Stardew Valley and Shovel Knight, who, like, now you can change it where your King of Spades is Shovel Knight and your Queen of This is Shield Knight and your King of Diamonds is, I think, Lewis, the mayor of Stardew Valley. And so if we had reached that level, we could have done a thing where it's like, I'm trying to think of who hasn't been canceled of all the personalities that I knew on the internet. Let's just say this is just say Mr. Beast. This is a terrible idea, but like or better, like a comedian, right? A comedian everybody likes. Basically make it where there's DLC where they become the announcer voice. All of the house answers were written by not all the house answers, but there's an extra player that's always playing with you that's entirely got answers written by them. So when you're playing that DLC, you're hearing their voice, you're seeing their player ticket, and you're trying to figure out which answer is theirs and versus the house answer. It's like kind of what you're talking about, Joe, and I've always thought that would be a cool idea. It's just the kind of thing where it would have to be doing so well that we could afford to make it a person that's known. And yeah, if it's not, like Mustin, for instance, who, by the way, Mustin's got his hands all over this thing. He wrote content for the first game. The first game has fake credits, which we never say anywhere that they're fake, but at the end of every match, you see these totally fake credits that make it look like it was a TV show. And one of the names in the credits is William Mustin. And that's because William from the 1-Ups and Mustin from the 1-Ups both were like there in a capacity of like, we'll say early beta testers. But yeah, also Mustin did a fair amount of audio work on the second game. So he's, you know, it's funny you mentioned him because he's so involved.
I kind of figured Mustin had his fingers in this.
Yeah, you know that guy.
He seems to get everywhere.
Yes, and he deserves it.
Oh, man, need Chico Ray. Some Chico Ray music.
Oh, man, that's a deep cut. Talk about canceled. Woo. I'm not even going to claim to know what Chico Ray is. I don't even know any of those people I was just talking about. Anyway.
Yeah, that's probably for the better.
Yeah.
To not know Chico Ray. Oh, man. I know we've been chatting for a while. Is there anything else you wanted to chat about with the game that we didn't bring up yet?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I would just say the main thing we want people to know is that it is now on all platforms. By all platforms, I mean pretty much all the platforms you're likely to play. It's not coming to Unix. Let it go, Brad. But other than Unix,
not on the
Wii. You got your Xbox One, Xbox Series X, Xbox Series S, Switch 1, Switch 2, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Steam for PC, Steam for Mac. I don't think I forgot any, but the point is that, like, you can play it. Some people were waiting to put it on the Switch. They like the portability of it. Take it over to your friend's house. Also, we now have a bundle. If you prefer it on Steam and you bought Use Your Words 1, now there's a bundle deal where, sort of as like a thank you for buying Use Your Words 1, you can complete your collection for a discounted price. So that's going on. And if you're the kind of person that like skeptically waits to buy or wish lists something until it gets discounted, I will say both Use Your Words 1 and 2 are going to be in the Steam Spring Sale. So if that's you, you might just wishlist it now. And I can't tell you the date legally because we're not supposed to, but I can tell you it will be in the spring.
Very, very good. Glenn, any other questions on your end?
No. I think he has answered my questions quite well. Thank you. Yeah, that was nice.
It's been a real pleasure, y'all. I appreciate you just letting me kind of pontificate and talk at length about this game and the process of it. And hopefully somebody listening will give it a try and it'll, you know, make their party better. That's the whole idea, is like everybody loves to get into a situation where you just got a bit going with your friends. You're bantering back and forth. You start a bit, you add to it, and you're all laughing. And if you're really lucky, it can become a catchphrase. This is the kind of game that goes, hey, what if that was the game? What if the game tricked you into that exact situation without you having to try? And there are still to this day catchphrases that I have come up with, or that I remember from games of Use Your Words. And so I think that's the real pitch. It only took me an hour to come up with it, but basically it's the inside joke machine.
I think slug fucking is gonna have some legs around here.
Okay, I'm gonna just tell you the okay, you know how inside jokes are never funny when you try to tell somebody out of context? I am going to attempt to do it anyway, and I'm not promising it'll be funny. It may well not be funny, but listen, you had me on this podcast not to just read the normal, you know, not to read off of a piece of paper. You wanted to get a little deeper than that. So the prompt was, name a reason to believe your girlfriend is a ghost. And a friend of mine wrote the answer, that bitch looked like a ghost. And that was it. Good night, everybody. Like I said, I mean, inside jokes are not funny. And if there's one thing you remember, it's don't try to share an inside joke out of context in a live setting. Thanks. That's my time.
Brent, you are amazing. Thank you for joining us. Where can people keep up to date with you and what you are doing?
So I am still Brental Floss on most of my social media. My Instagram is Brental Graham because somebody parked Brental Floss many years ago and then didn't do anything with it. You can find basically. If you're interested in following Use Your Words, we were lucky enough that Use Your Words is what we are able to be on Twitter. And I think it's Use Your Words. If you type in Use Your Words to Facebook, you can find us. Also, just because I'm here and why not, I also am the composer and playwright of a Star Trek parody musical that played off Broadway called Khan the Musical. And you can check that out as well. You can follow us on socials. We have an album out.
I was just going to say we didn't even have time to touch on that.
That's okay. No, this was very much a themed. I mean, I think that when you and I spoke about possibly recording this, I think specifically talking about Use Your Words. But I'm here and maybe there's somebody still listening that's like, I already own Use Your Words, but they might be interested in a Star Trek parody musical. And if you like Brental Floss, well, it's kind of the Brental Floss treatment on The Wrath of Khan and Star Trek in general. So you can follow us online, Khan the Musical on all the socials, or khan the musical.com.
Where all has that been performed? I know it was off Broadway.
Do you advertise? Well, hold up. I'm going to interject for and ask a question for once. Have you told the folks over at Star Trek Shitposting about this?
Star Trek Shitposting, I mean, do you mean the Facebook group?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Like, it's really hard to get groups of fans to be aware of your thing, because if you're posting it yourself, then it's self-promotion. And you know how so many subreddits and so many Facebook groups, basically, I have tried every which way to get various little clips and things onto Star Trek shit posting, Star Trek wholesome posting, shitty Daystrom Institute. And this is not to say anything bad about those places, but often, even if I'm being a little bit clever or sly, the moderators go, no, you can get in line with the other 80 people that are trying to get their Star Trek musical or parody video or webcomic or whatever promoted. So let us just say I am pivoting this year in the vein of your question to conventions. We will be performing at or appearing at least with some kind of presence at Trek Fest in Riverside, Iowa, Trek Long Island in Long Island, New York, Las Vegas for Star Trek to Las Vegas in August. Damn. We are also talking possibly to Dragon Con. Definitely no confirmation of that. That'll be the Atlanta area in the fall. But Joe, you asked where it's been performed. Thus far, The developmental readings of Khan took place in Philadelphia, Cincinnati, New York City, Dallas, Texas, and Garrison, New York. And then it has had full productions in New York City. That was off Broadway. Also, Buffalo, New York. There was a licensed production there. And the regional premiere was in Fort Worth, Texas. But this year is the year, baby. Okay, we are going to have productions in... I can't tell you the name of the first city because it hasn't been announced. But I'll just sort of tell you the basics of the ones I can. It's going to be TBA, NorCal. That's TBA, Northern California. Followed by... Wollongong, Australia.
Wow.
Then you got Fenton, Michigan, which is the Flint, Detroit area, followed by Murfreesboro, Tennessee, which is Nashville area. And then Philadelphia, coming back home to Philadelphia, SideQuest Theater. Big rec from me. They are very nerdy and very funny. I saw a production of a Lord of the Rings parody musical there late last year and got very excited to partner with them on a licensed production of Khan. Then it will be going back to the Midwest Great Lakes area in a not yet announced production after that. And damn, what am I forgetting? We're talking to a Reno, Nevada potential production they haven't signed yet. So like, you know, it's happening in a lot of places. I'm trying to plant a lot of seeds. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, you know, if you're listening and there's a Trekkie that's also a musical theater fan that you know, they might enjoy listening to it. It's on Spotify, Apple Music, Bandcamp, pretty much all the places you can put music into your face through your.
You got to get it on the Star Trek cruise. That would be, you know, captive audience.
I really would like to do that. We, without going too deep into it, we feel pretty solidly that we're not worried about Paramount copyright wise, and I could talk about that for half an hour, but let us just say the correspondences we've had make us feel that we're on pretty solid ground. However, unlike the other conventions I've mentioned, I believe Star Trek the Cruise is like official Star Trek, official Paramount rights holders kind of thing. So I've shied away from that one, especially until, like, the thing is, this year we literally want, what can I say? We want people that were on Star Trek TV shows to notice that this exists. Like, they are at the conventions. Will they notice that? I don't know. But it's more likely that they will than it would be if we didn't go to these conventions. Who knows who will talk to who? Who knows who will be like, oh my God, I want to sing this song at the, you know, the cabaret night at the cruise. You never know.
They will Wheaton or they won't Wheaton.
That's nicely done. Nicely done.
Thanks.
Is this something that you might try applying to do at MAGFest?
You know, it's funny. I won't name the person in the music department who had this idea, but there was a friend of mine in the music department that actually thought about doing some kind of reading of the show, sort of to preempt the off-Broadway production early in 2023. The thing is, you know, it's a 2-hour musical with a cast that is at absolute minimum 8 people. So while I would freaking love for it to be at MAGFest, it would be the kind of thing where, you know, 2 hours of programming is kind of a big ask. How do you do it? Maybe it could be kind of like when you go to conventions and they do like table reads of scripts, but they're all doing them and, you know, it's voice actors doing them in funny voices. Could it be a table read with like somebody reading the stage directions like Kirk enters? Now we switch to this scene. Maybe. But I think that what's probably more likely is, well, I'll put it this way. What we're experimenting with this year is a presentation that's a hybrid of a couple of songs sung live, a couple of clips and videos of, you know, prior productions and music videos for YouTube, and then a Q&A. We're going to see how that goes. I would love for it to be put on in its entirety at a convention at some point, but the business model of like a whole 2-hour show being even familiarized, much less memorized, for one weekend, it would just really require, just like the use your words thing, it would require a level of popularity that just transcends where we currently are.
Gotcha. And I think it would work at MAGFest. And I think you have the fan base that attends MAGFest that would make it worth it. But
well, if MAGFest keeps on being
an odd chunk to program, so.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the meat in the middle would be some kind of like concert version, the thing is, Data is already the narrator of the show. So it's like, could there be some 75-minute version that's like Data's flying through telling you the basics of what happens, and then they sing this song? Okay, but we're not going to finish that song because we're going off to this part, and you know what happens in this scene? It's this. All right, start singing. Okay, now stop, because I got to tell you about this next thing. You know, like maybe it could be that. That could be fun. But I think that my hope is that the show just gets its footing in a certain, you know, among Trekkies, among indie musical theater nerds, and certainly among people that are both. To me, I'm talking to a theater in the DMV, which for people that don't know is kind of the general Washington, D.C. area, like, and, you know, 300-mile radius around that, give or take. I think that because so many people involved with MAGFest are in that zone, that if they were able to see it, that might happen. I'm going to try to get them to come up to Philadelphia, the ones that are Maryland-based and Virginia-based, because for some of them, that's a pretty quick Amtrak or, you know, an hour or two drive. We shall see.
Kennedy Center's available.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? It reminds me of the people like, you know, Michael Crawford is the guy that was the Phantom of the Opera in the original Broadway show and got a like Presidential Medal of You're a Badass or whatever, you know, like Presidential Medal of Freedom or whatever they give to people that are like, hey, you're a really great, important person. But he got it under Trump. And it's like, that would just so, wouldn't that just so suck if you were like, man, I'm old. I haven't gotten a gig in 15 years. I'm being honored for my life of work, but also like it's this guy. Anyway, hey, maybe we shouldn't talk about that. Why did I bring it up? But anyway, but yeah, the Kennedy Center, I think I will pass. I think I will pass this time around, but maybe when it's, you know, maybe 4 years or 8 years or after a certain funeral, I don't know, you know, we'll see. We'll see.
We'll see. After a certain month-long party in America.
I would never say such a thing, and I don't know what you're talking about, but invite me. Anyway, so, yeah, yeah.
Oh, beautiful. Does anyone have any final questions for Brent?
I do not.
I feel like my questions were pretty well answered.
And we're not letting Jacob ask anymore after that last one. Brent, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, hanging out with us. We will let you get going so you can enjoy the rest of your night. Do you have any final words before you head out?
I just want to say this has been a pleasure. And Joe, I have to say, I forgot how sonorous your baritone voice is when it's just speaking right into a mic. I got to say, it's very nice. It's been lovely listening to it and everybody else's. And thanks for just letting me talk about myself. I would be doing it anyway, but this time I was doing it into a microphone. So, hey, thanks.
Absolutely. There's still so many stories between us that we could tell. I'll never forget our time wandering around Baltimore, stopping in porn stores looking for markers during BitGen.
Oh, man. That is so, that is a while back. One of these days, yeah, we'll have to, it's been so long, I bet we could trade stories that at least one of the parties doesn't remember. So it's really not so much trading as like, yeah, exactly. It's like reminding. Yeah. Awesome. Well, hey, thanks so much for having me on, bud.
Take care, Brent. Have a good one.
All right. Later, guys.
Laters.
Later.
All right. Glenn, were you going to stick around and hang out with news for us? What did you want to do?
I think I'm going to probably head out because I'm going to spend some time with my wife.
Sounds good. Well, I want to thank you for coming on, chatting with Brent with us, and being part of the Use Your Words 2 conversation. Do you have any final words before we let you get going?
I don't think Rivers Cuomo is Kurt Cobain, despite the rumors.
That would make sense.
There you go. That's my final words.
Laters.
Later.
Oh, man. What a show. That was a fun chat.
Yeah, yes. It was. For a game I didn't know anything about, but it was nice to listen to him talk about it.
You should have played the other night when we were playing.
I don't remember what I was doing, but...
Being a dork?
Probably.
Yeah. So anyway, Lloyd asking got room. Yeah, Lloyd, hop in if you want to chat. We are going to move on to news, and we are going to chat about the Sony State of Play that just went on and some other news tidbits. Lloyd, where are you? There's a Lloyd. Welcome in, Lloyd.
I was ready to yoink him if he didn't have access. So,
and Glenn is still lurking. We see you, Glenn. Mr. Muted Glenn.
Oh, thank God. I found the mute creepy button to the stream, so yay. I'm only hearing one voice at a time now.
Ah, yay. Yes.
I wonder if Glenn just left his computer. He's like, I'll just mute. Bye. So, yeah, Sony State of Play. That's the big news of the week. So let us go into that. Just happened today. We had an hour of previews and trailers and all that fun stuff. They started off. Ember Lab has a brand new Kena game. Scars of Cosmora launching 2026. Announced for PS5 and PC. What do y'all think?
Looks cute.
Yeah.
I haven't played the first one. If it comes to Xbox, I'll play it, because the first one was great.
Yeah, I platinumed the first one. As soon as this came on, my first note was, yes. And then when she was riding the wolf, the second note was, puppy. I want that one.
I want it, but if they're going to do another 6-year exclusive like the first game, I'm not going to fucking bother.
That's fair.
Like that, it was way too long of an exclusive. And if they do that again, I'm just not going to bother this time. So we'll see how it releases. Ghost of Yote Legends multiplayer free DLC coming March 10th.
Cool.
We knew it was coming because they added it to the Ghost of Tsushima pretty early on. We just didn't know it was coming already.
All over your face.
Just when you see it.
Death Stranding 2 hitting PC March 19th.
I guess.
Yay. What was that?
I said we.
Nerd.
Yeah. For Loop got a new trailer. It is a 4-player roguelike progression style game. It is in pre-beta with playtests coming soon.
It didn't look terrible. I kind of like the look of it.
Yeah, I want to give that one a try.
A new trailer for Pragmata coming out April 24th with a demo out now.
I've played it. It was a pretty good demo. I am looking forward to this game.
I've downloaded the demo. I'm going to play it this weekend.
It is good.
Resident Evil Requiem is going to be coming out the 27th. They showed Leon going back to the Raccoon City Police Department, and Leon looked old.
Yeah, he looks like he's in his late 40s, maybe even mid-50s at this point.
So I've read somewhere that they
be like 60 he's infected. Now.
Somebody thinks, like, they were saying that he's, like, infected in it.
I don't know about
saying
that.
Or guessing?
I don't know. It was just like I was scrolling through some Facebook crap.
Because that'd be great if that's like a late game spoiler and you just gave it away.
According to the lore, he's like 60 years old now.
Ugh.
Jesus.
So yeah,
okay, that explains why he looks old.
Dying.
Yeah.
We all are, Joe.
Yeah, we are.
Just some of us a little faster than others, you old farts.
Legacy of Kain Defiance Remastered is going to be coming out March 3rd. There will be a deluxe edition, which includes a playable demo for an unreleased sequel.
Nice.
Yeah, okay. Pre-order starts today.
What, Brie?
Pre-order starts today.
Yep. March 3rd and should be hitting everything. Nice. Showed a trailer for Brigandine Abyss, a new Brigandine game. Kind of shocked me. Comes out later this year.
What's that?
Tactical it's a strategy. 1998.
Yeah, strategy RPG game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So not up my alley.
No. All I had to do was say tactical and everyone would know that no one cares. But
my penis shriveled
me
up.
Me and Purnell.
Yeah.
Dead or Alive 6 is getting a one last update with Last Round, and it will include a photo mode that has titty physics.
Yeah, as all photo modes should.
True, true.
Titty physics in photo mode.
It's Dead or Alive. What were you expecting?
Yeah,
long haul is a thing.
Reposition a character. Well,
Dead or Alive was a fighting game long before volleyball.
Yes, I'm just saying that the beach volleyball was there for a reason because people were already, you know, into that game for different reasons.
Have you seen the jiggle physics in the first game?
No.
I played the hell out of the first Dead or Alive game.
Look up Dead or Alive 1 jiggle physics because I want to hear a live reaction to seeing these for the first time.
Okay.
That was PS2, wasn't it?
PS1.
Life jiggle physics. Okay, let's see here. Nope, that's 6.
Riveting stuff.
I know. See, the truncate silence is going to handle most of it, but the more we talk, the more that gets fucked up.
But, I'm not finding a good video, but yeah.
Not. Well, I guess I'll have to find one.
I can post a video for you. I did find one because I'm me. Pissing and planning. There you go.
Aki, you have to be you. No one else is willing.
Fair.
True.
Oh, it came with an ad. Come on. I can't even watch the video.
Really?
Oh my god, it has them.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Riveting stuff.
Wow, I'm surprised they had them way back in that game. All holy right. Shit.
Like, they actually had a setting.
Terrible.
They oh, yeah, had they had a setting for, like...
That you like could put them to, like, extreme.
Is. Yeah.
So they Jesus, would, like, bounce to the so ground. I'm not joking. They would bounce like feet up and down. It was
yes, photo mode definitely insane. Needed it then.
Yeah.
Anyway, new development on a new DOA has started. Confirmed in development for PS5. Don't know about anything else. Yeah, Control Resonant got a new video that'll be out this year.
They also just announced a new CEO for Remedy Games who starts on March 1st. So hopefully that's good for them.
Nice. Been nice.
I mean, were they having issues before or is it just...
I have no idea.
Here's the new guy.
Oh, yeah, they just announced it the other day and they're like, oh, hey, new guy. And here's his background and we're excited. Yeah.
Showed off a game called Crimson Moon. It looks like a co-op Souls-like that'll be out this year.
Yeah.
Looked interesting until I saw them fighting one enemy at a time, and then I'm like, no thank you.
Yeah, meh.
I want hack and slash. I do not want Souls-like.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got a hack and slash later, and you didn't care.
Oh, we'll get to that. Beast of Reincarnation got a new video that's from Game Freak coming out in August.
Still looks really cool.
Yep, looks cool.
Rayman 30th Anniversary Edition is coming from Ubisoft and Digital Eclipse. Comes with 5 playable versions of the game, including the 1995 PS1 version, Museum, Prototype, comes out tomorrow with a physical version in June.
Yippee-doo-dah, yippity-day, and stuff.
I am excited about that one. Rayman is always good.
Yes.
Mina the Hollower got a new little video that will have a demo out tomorrow on PlayStation. Mm-hmm. And according to an email that they sent out, Mina the Hollower is bigger than all of the Shovel Knight games combined.
Wow.
Yeah. That should be pretty
good. You're going to grab the demo right away?
I don't grab too many demos, but just because I don't want to replay everything. Now, if the demo carries over to the full game, I'll grab it.
Fair.
Neva Prologue coming out February 19th.
Yeah, that looked really good. I really like Neva in the first place. So,
do you want the rest of the news on it?
Sure.
It's DLC, it's all platforms, and it's $3.
Ooh.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Better.
$2.99.
Definitely want.
That is it.
Okay, let's see. My wish list.
Yako Shinobi Ops, or Yako, whatever. Four-player stealth game coming out 27 on the PS5.
I tuned out for that one.
That was interesting, I'll say. It's
an Aki game if Aki gets three friends and a PlayStation.
I'm sure there's a way to play it single player. And if there is, I don't need other people. I'm the best stealth person I know.
And we'll see. Project Windless. It is from Krafton, which has me incredibly skeptical, but you're a giant fucking chicken.
That was a very weird trailer.
Novel series called The Bird That Drinks Tears or something was what they started with. I wasn't really sure what that was all about, but yeah, you're a giant chicken.
Yeah.
It was like Dynasty Warriors style, maybe?
Cock.
Joe covered both of my notes about Krafton being in it, possible issue, and the giant man chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looked good, but I have very, very, very little trust in Krafton to not make an AI-loaded game of bullshit. But we'll find out. Could be okay.
Yep.
Could be. Star Wars Galactic Racer coming out 2026. Good thing Jacob just said BRB got a piss.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm also interested in that game because I think it looked pretty awesome.
Well, tell us about it.
Well, I mean, it looked pretty photorealistic for, you know, a fantasy sci-fi racer. I haven't looked into any more of it, but like I was a huge pod racing fan. I have blistered my thumb on an N64 controller. I really like Star Wars Racer games for some reason. So I'm all for that.
Yeah, we had a group of five people who would get together around an N64 just passing pads around for Pod Racer. That game was so good. We had so much fun with that. Mm-hmm. And then I played Star Wars Racer on PlayStation.
Mm.
That one wasn't so good. But this looks more like Pod Racer. I really want to try this.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob, back yet?
Nope.
No, guess he's missing out on the one thing he wanted to talk about.
Oh.
He's a wiener. A fucking wiener. Hey, Bethesda Pinball's out tonight. Let's see.
Yay.
007 First Light. Got another goddamn trailer.
Another trailer.
Like, I'm already tired of this game. It's not out. And I'm just tired of it. But every other week, it's something new on. Oh, Jacob's
but
back.
This time,
they revealed it was talking about Star Wars.
Early James Bond.
Serious?
You went. You missed it. You were gone right before. Specifically long enough for us to talk about Star Wars Galactic Racer.
Damn it.
And we even delayed it multiple times.
I saw the new trailer. It was really cool.
Oh, well, that doesn't matter because we're talking about First Light now.
I still just talked about it.
Oh, I don't care because we're talking about First Light. Did you know I'm tired of this goddamn game already?
Thankfully, you only have to wait until like May 27th or something to like stop seeing as many trailers about it announcing it. And
oh, God, three and a half months.
We'll see less promoting it, but then we're just going to get a whole bunch of them releasing, just saying, hey, it's out. Yeah. Please go buy it.
Yes, but those won't have as much repetitive gameplay in them, hopefully.
Yeah, well, no, they definitely will, because it's probably going to be the same trailer like 50 times every week that you see. Exactly. It's going to get worse.
Yay. Anyway, next game that was announced, Metal Gear Solid Master Collection Volume 2 is finally happening. And yes, it includes Metal Gear Solid 4 and Peace Walker.
And there is a final update coming for Collection 1.
With better visuals and text.
And Snake Eater is now on 50% off sale.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Snake Eater Delta specifically.
Well, yes, specifically Delta, yes. My notes do not include
Master
Delta
Collection. Symbol. Master Collection Volume 2 will launch August 27th on PS5. And then Konami confirmed Steam, Switch, Switch 2, and Series X and S. So Metal Gear Solid 4 finally coming to other platforms. Yay. Speaking of Metal Gear, Darwin's Paradox Tactical Octopus Action. Demo coming out tomorrow, releasing April 2nd.
Yeah,
I have been waiting for this since I first heard about it.
Yeah, it looks cute. Definitely.
Yeah, it looks like Limbo or Inside, except you're a cute octopus.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks quite interesting. It is a Konami game, and it was revealed for PlayStation. I can confirm, based on the store page I'm looking at, that it is hitting Xbox as well.
April 2nd as well, same day.
Yep, and it has a pre-order skin pack where you can get. They don't have the name. They just like one is psyched and one is dotted. Octopuses, octopi, octopices,
octopodia,
rice's pices. Castlevania 40th anniversary is here. And with it, we are getting a brand new Castlevania game from Evil Empire and Motion Twin called Castlevania Belmont's Curse, releasing later this year.
It looked pretty.
It did. I did not get to see if that's multi-plat. I'm guessing it is.
I would think so.
Especially given it's by like the Dead Cells devs, they seem to hit everything.
Yeah.
Konami's not done, though, because they have another game, this one with Annapurna.
Annapurna, yeah.
Bree, what's
that
this
one? That was surprising.
So, yeah, they're going to be doing Silent Hill Townfall, and I think it said this year sometime, right?
2026.
Yes. Yeah. That makes me interested more so in a Silent Hill game, just seeing Annapurna attached to it. Also, it looked like a very different style of game for me. I don't know how to explain that, but it looked a little different. It looked a little quieter in some ways, like psychological horror.
I didn't even recognize it as Silent Hill until he started hitting things with the board.
Yeah. It looks good.
Bad news. PS PC.
Yeah. Yep. I'm not surprised.
Steam and Epic. But, more Konami with Rev Noir, an anime-ish RPG with golden rain that kills.
Yep. And a cute black and purple cat.
The golden rain turns people into golden statues.
And allegedly, again, PlayStation only. For now, it'd be nice if Konami changes course with some of these, but
that's an unexpected kind of golden shower.
Yeah.
Yep.
John Wick is getting a game.
Looks interesting.
I don't know.
It's a license more property. Like, we'll see.
Yeah, it looked more like the movies than, what was that last one? John Wick Hex?
John Wick Hex was okay at best.
Well, that wasn't meant to be a John Wick game. That was meant to be a tactical puzzle kind of thing.
It was obscenely hard.
It was called a John Wick.
Yeah, good. It's Mike Biffle. He makes hard shit.
Yeah, no.
Marathon coming out. They got a video that we all zoned out on. Good sign.
Yeah, there's a preview weekend, February 26th through March 2nd.
Yep. I'm just nodding and agreeing because I don't care. They showed off some
crowd. Wait, you're not going to buy the collector's edition that doesn't even include the game?
Dude, they do that with so many games. That doesn't mean anything anymore. They've been doing those collector packages for years now. It's nothing special.
It's still stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's stupid, but it's nothing new, nothing different, nothing special. It's like when they release a collector's edition with a digital code. Not everyone has a disc drive anymore. No one wants a disc if they don't have a disc drive. Nothing new.
Okay, that's fair, but if I buy a collector's edition of a game...
Then buy a collector's edition that includes a game. Don't buy a collector's package that doesn't include a game. Does the collector's edition say it is a Marathon game collector's edition? Or is it a Marathon bundle or Marathon physical item package? Because they probably worded it specifically that it very clearly doesn't include a game. You got to buy that shit separately.
I don't know off the top of my head.
Want a disc.
Yeah, and by not putting the game in, they don't have to have different bundles for different platforms.
Yeah. That's why when you get stuff from like Ubisoft, you just get a generic collector's edition in a box and then your disc separately. So.
It's been so damn long since I've ordered a collector's edition of anything. I think the last one I did was Mass Effect Legendary Edition, which was just a steelbook.
Let's see. They announced some future PS Plus classic games. They're like, here's a game coming out in March, and here's a game coming out in May. I don't want to wait until May for Time Crisis. Fucking release it now. It's clearly working.
But I'm excited for Time Crisis.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. May.
It's going to be May.
I like that they added the motion control, the gyro, to mimic the handheld gun.
Oh, it's great. Mm-hmm. But why do we have to wait until May? And you know that'll be the only classic that month. Oh, it's gross how slow they've gotten with their classics. Big Walk is going to be on PS Plus at launch when it releases this year.
Nice.
Saros will be out April 30th.
I never finished Returnal.
But are you excited for Saros?
I'd be more excited if I'd finished Returnal, but yes, I like the look of Saros.
Okay.
Marvel Tokon is out August 6th. Showed a video.
Voice acting is great in it.
And then they confirmed God of War Trilogy Remake. It exists. It's early. It's going to happen. It'll probably be in like 35 years.
Yes.
And then,
surprise,
this might have been the cool thing of the show to me. Mm-hmm. Sony, Santa Monica Studios, and Megacat partnered up to release God of War Sons of Sparta. And it is out now.
Yep.
Thank you, Bojangles.
Pixel art kind of side-scroller style game, fighting game. Looked pretty interesting.
Yeah, it looked pretty neat. But that's the state of play.
It was underwhelming to me.
It was
there's a couple of nice looking games in there, but most of that
$30. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Never deluxe for $40. Mega Cat, I love you. I don't think your games are worth $40.
I don't know what Sony else game made. On it.
They do a lot of NES stuff, like retro NES. They're an NES publisher. They make physical NES games.
Okay, that's probably why I don't know.
Oh my god. $30 for that game. All right, what other news was there? Aki, what do you have?
I have just a couple bits of information. A game that we've known about for a while that disappeared for a good long time, Replaced, is finally getting a demo, and it's going to release in March, supposedly. That's the cyberpunk pixely 2D platformer that was shown off, what, 5-6 years ago, maybe longer even. Well, it's finally got a demo as of today, and it's releasing in exactly a month, supposedly. We'll see. And then there's also lots of investors are pulling out of Microsoft right now. So, yay, I guess.
Do you have word or info on investors pulling out of Microsoft?
It seems to be because of all the AI stuff and how the winds are blowing that they're pulling out. I don't know if it's obviously it's going to be a big issue for the short term. I don't know how it's going to impact the long term, obviously, but and it's not like Microsoft is going to fail or anything. So meh.
It's just they're like losing their shares more money. Are down $357 billion.
Yeah.
So a company,
sounds about right, yeah.
A company in a few days could just lose $350 billion of value,
and still be fine.
And I'm excited to get $49 from Twitch this month.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, over
the class tiers in society are just a little off.
Yeah, over a course of a week when the AI stuff first started to go straight to shit and everyone was getting pissed off, they lost over $600 million in under a week.
Anyway, some other stuff Megacat did. They did WrestleQuest, Coffee Crisis, Bite the Bullet, Little Medusa. They also did the remakes of the backyard football and baseball games that have come out. That again, those aren't on Xbox, so I don't know if they're any good or not.
WrestleQuest is the only thing you mentioned there that I'm familiar with.
And WrestleQuest is dope because our buddy Danimal did the music for that one. What other news?
That was it for me.
All right, Bree, what do you have?
All right. The ROG Ally has been in the news lately because apparently only 5 months into its life, there are reports of a lot of people having to send them in for repair. One article on Windows Central says that they are also struggling with Asus support on the repairs because they, quote, have a high repair volume.
That doesn't sound good.
That's not troubling or anything.
No, not at all. Not at all. Apparently, The Outer Worlds 2 underperformed, and Obsidian is not going to make a 3 based on that financial data. There are potential things in the works for Avowed, though.
That's good. Nice. I did like Avowed.
It's a shame The Outer Worlds didn't do particularly well, but I had already known that just from all the reviews. People seem to have issues with it. It looked fine to me, but
I'm guessing Outer Worlds 2 did good. It just didn't do... we're multi-platform Xbox good, and we need 50 billion sales for everything.
Yeah, fair.
And I think Avowed is coming to PlayStation soon, in a few days.
Yeah. With the anniversary update.
Yeah, so that's nice. At least getting stuff for that. Let's see, what else? Jumping around here. Jurassic Park Classic Games Collection is being delisted March 31st. It's a collection of mostly 8-bit classic games by Limited Run Games.
16-bit. NES and Genesis.
It has. I thought it had 8-bit as well. Sorry.
It might have.
It does. It has the old Nintendo game.
Yeah.
And also one of the Game Boy games.
It has a Game Boy game on? All right. That's new to me.
Yeah. 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 Cool. It does.
I'm not going to lie. It was underwhelming to revisit.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I don't know. I'm not shedding it. I mean, I would prefer obviously it be available for forever, but I'm also like not really upset by this one.
Yeah.
Avowed's only 50 on PlayStation.
Yeah, also being delisted, NBA 2K Playgrounds 2 and WWE 2K Battlegrounds. They're both being delisted on February 20th, and they'll be closing the servers for both of those games on July 9th.
I never played Battlegrounds, so I don't know anything about it.
I liked Battlegrounds, actually, but it was kind of a tedious progression. It was a little grindy.
It was the arcadey one, wasn't it?
Yeah, they're like bobbleheady characters. Yeah,
I think that was like the only one I've enjoyed recently.
Yeah.
Because it was different.
It's the only wrestling game I've really played on Xbox. So, yeah. Let's see. Collector's Edition art book of Clair Obscur Expedition 33 was confiscated by customs in Iraq because supposedly they thought the expedition journal looked like it might be an antiquated and book of historical significance. That's what they cited.
That's hilarious.
To the person. The book features fantasy art painted on parchment-looking papers. I'm unclear, though, how they could mistake a clearly modern printed book made to look old alongside a steelbook of the game and a statue with English writing on it I don't know how they could.
It might have been integrated. Like, I was going to say, it might have also been like a prototype of it.
Yeah, but it supposedly they had just ordered the collector's edition box. So
it's just someone isn't very smart, that's all.
Did that collector's edition come with the game?
I don't know, actually. It just comes with a steelbook for the game. Yeah. Let's see. I'm skipping around here. Oh, well, let's see. How about Ball Squad?
Yay! Someone else is using the buttons! Oh, I'm so happy.
You're welcome.
I'm so happy. So proud of you. So
brought this up on Tuesday's show, but Stern Pokemon Pinball. Not to be confused with the Pokemon Pinball Game Boy game. So this is a real table Stern's making. Looks like there are three models starting from around 7,000. The medium model is about 9,600. And the limited edition model is about 13,000. It looks like the four classic, probably most well-known Pokemon are included in the main design of the table. Pikachu, Charmander, Squirtle, and Bulbasaur are in the center lane. There's also monsters like Eevee, Gengar, Snorlax. Team Rocket is represented in the upper art of the playfield.
Is Psyduck on there?
I don't remember seeing Psyduck, but that doesn't mean that he wasn't there. I know, right?
I knew Joe was going to say that.
Looks like the table elements like water type, fire type indicators, stuff like that, are the base of the playfield for each of the four main characters, so probably some of the table goals. There's not a lot of information up on Stern's page right now, but there are a couple of pictures of the table that people have found and was able to kind of get some ideas of what might be going on. Looks like there's a skill shot with a Pokeball that opens up. This looks like a pretty cool table. There's going to be video and audio from the animated series, custom battle sequences using Stern's Spike 3 technology. I could not find an exact release date or designer name, just that it's coming soon.
Very cool.
Yeah. Next up, itch.io. I know this was posted in the news in the Discord. That was the word I was looking for. They're again offering a charity bundle. This time it's the No Ice in Minnesota bundle. Is raising funds for the Immigrant Law Center in Minnesota for the low price.
Their bundles are insane. I just want to say, insane.
Yes.
Insanity. $10 gets you.
Yes. So
how many games?
1,400, you can get,
I think.
Yeah, it's around 1,400 items. There's nearly 300 video games and over 1,000 tabletop RPGs. And there's some other material as well. Like assets and things that you can pick up in this pack. And of course, you can always donate more money if you want. Some games in there you might recognize, just a few names of things that I saw really quick. Baba Is You, Calico, Epico, however it's supposed to be pronounced, Hyper Dot, which was a fabulous game, by the way. And as of the time of this podcast, they have made over $275,000. This will be running for another 28 or 29 days. Do you mind if I post here or the link in the chat?
Go for it. That's what they're
for. And I know that's in the Discord as well, so you can always find that there if you're interested. But yeah, those bundles are pretty awesome.
And if we're talking bundles, I'm going to throw another one out there because Fanatical has a Safe in Our World charity bundle. It costs $17.99 right now and includes games like Peak, Winter Burrow, Minami Lane, Wordatro, Time Rift, Pumpkin Jack, Midnight Ramen, The Falconeer, Golf It, Cats and Quilts of Calico, Coney Island, and from our friends at Outright Games, Jumanji's in there.
Ooh, fucking you can
get yourself over 20 games for $18, and that is on Fanatical.
That's unbelievable.
That is unbelievable. Charity is good.
Very cool. All right, and Movie Watch.
It's Movie Watch. There.
All right, in case you hadn't heard already, the Mortuary Assistant game is getting a movie opening tomorrow, Friday the 13th.
Ooh, spoopy.
Yeah, supposedly it's pretty close to the game in terms of its plot and I don't know, acting and stuff and things. Another horror game, Markiplier's Iron Lung, based on the 2022 horror game by David Szymanski, is out now. Not only is Markiplier starring in and directing the film, but he put up his own money to make it. And so far, the movie's brought in something like $37.1 million. And its production budget is $3 million. Yeah,
it's done surprisingly
well. Yeah. So I may actually go see that.
He had a heartfelt little thank you to everybody on YouTube that I saw. It was so cute. He was crying in it. Oh.
Nice. And then this is more TV news than it is movie watch, but Baldur's Gate 3 is supposedly getting an HBO TV adaptation from the same person who was in charge of The Last of Us. Larian Studios is not directly involved with the project, though. Craig Mazin, the head of this project, claims to have put like 1,000 hours into Baldur's Gate 3, and that's supposed to make him qualified to work on the show. I haven't seen Last of Us to know if it's any good or how the adaptation is, but Baldur's Gate.
I've heard it's really good.
Seems like a massive undertaking to interpret when the Larian writers spent upwards of 10 years on that project. So,
yeah, they're not happy about it, actually.
Yeah. But, yeah, just so you know, the show is in early pre-production. There's no estimated date for air yet. And the last thing we kind of, barked about for a couple minutes is the elephant in the room. I don't want us to get too far into the weeds on this one, but, you know, just talking about Discord, because that is gaming-related and show-related for us, is going to be implementing a teen by default mode globally next month. For those of you who have heard about this already, great. If you haven't, they're looking to implement some sort of face scan or ID to verify your age, or you'll be put in teen mode, restricting your access to the site and its features. There have been more recent updates to that, where Discord has recognized that people are upset and not trusting them due to recent data breaches and that sort of thing. And they have suggested that there are other things in place that will mean a lot of established users may not have to submit for age verification. I'm not sure if that means they're going to use some sort of AI tool to come through messages, as one of my friends suggested.
They are.
They have promised that more FAQs about the process will be posted in the coming weeks.
I fucking hate these people. Why does everybody suck? Why does every company have to fucking suck?
Yeah. Because governments keep sucking.
Both governments and companies are made up of people, and people suck.
VLC literally the only good company on the planet?
I don't even know who that is. So
VLC Media Player. The video player.
They aren't a company, they're a foundation.
They're a guy. They're a single dude who has refused to sell his company to advertising. That's why VLC is good, because it's one person who hasn't given in to greed.
There's also WinRAR.
Yeah, but they still want you to pay. VLC's free.
Yeah.
And they don't ask for money. They don't nothing. Anyway, what else we got?
That was it for me.
Lloyd, what do you have?
Nothing that hasn't already been covered.
Jacob, what about you?
Yay! Blizzard is reportedly partnering with Arc Raider's own Nexon to revive StarCraft as a shooter.
Huh.
What?
Yeah. They're apparently the next, like, once again, they're going to try to do a shooter game for StarCraft.
Huh.
Good job, drug addicts.
Someone's having fun with the soundboard today.
So there's that. The 2XKO developers have been, approximately 80 developers out of the group have been laid off by Riot Games less than a month after the console release of the game. Doesn't say how much of the dev team that is. Might be all of them. Jesus. And the last bit of news I have, last week we talked about how Train Sim World has Thomas the Tank Engine DLC.
Yay!
Guess what? We're also getting a game. So now, like, it's going to be pared down quite a bit. So obviously little kids can play this without any issues, but you're going to be able to drive around the island of Sodor and other areas as various Thomas the Tank Engine characters.
Right on.
Well, that's kind of cute, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, like, my kids would have been all over this damn thing, like, God, like, seven or so years ago. But, like, I don't know, I'm still low-key excited.
Anything else? That it?
No.
Yay!
Wait, is that it? No, or is there more? No.
No, there's no more.
Okay. Because I asked two different questions and just got a single answer that contradicted each.
Be too happy!
All right, we're gonna turn off the soundboard for Maki. Someone's getting a little too friendly with it today. And in that case, you know, only one thing you could do, and
fucking kill you.
Should we get to reviews?
Hold on, interesting bit of news: a Norwegian electronics retailer called Komplett is going to give away Grand Theft Auto 6 if you give birth on launch day.
Oh, I saw that. Yes.
So it's 9 months away. If you want to get a free copy and you want to get busy, now's the time.
That's it? You get a free copy of a game for giving birth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That still might be a better incentive than the American incentive for having.
Yeah. Fun. Also, it's like fucking, it's like Norway. Like, they're going to take care of you. You know, they have like a nice.
What does it have to do with the game?
What does what have to do with the game?
Giving birth. Usually there's some kind of connection between.
No, it's just a promo. If you give birth to a kid on GTA 6 launch day, they'll give you a free copy.
I think
Lloyd, don't worry, you can't give birth.
Whatever. Don't chat about dreams.
And also, I don't think you're Norwegian.
No, I'm not.
There we go.
Yeah,
you're safe, Lloyd. You have to pay for it. You have to pay for it just like the rest of us schmucks.
Well, I could move back home and get better health care.
What's that?
Canada.
Yep.
Yeah.
Any other news, or should we move on to reviews?
I think we're good for reviews.
Lloyd, you going to stick around for reviews, or are you going to bounce?
I think I'm going to bounce and do something about this sinus infection so I can breathe.
I thought you were going to say do something more productive than this bullshit, but you know.
I mean, either way, I was going to say jerking off helps.
But I wasn't going to say it.
Not out loud, at least.
Okay.
All right, Lloyd, give us some final words before you head out.
Breathing is not optional.
Mm.
I heavily disagree with that statement.
Oh, he's not here. Oh, he is still here. I thought, nah, no, he's not.
Oh, no, he just left.
Yeah, he left. So, there you go.
All right.
First game to talk about, Super Bomberman Collection, developed by Red Art Games, published by Konami, provided to us by Konami. Thank you, Konami. Jacob, say thank you, Konami.
Thank you, Konami.
Released February 5th, Series X and S, Switch, Switch 2, PS4, PS5 for $19.99. Party battle game Super Bomberman is now available as a collection featuring a total of 7 titles with 12 versions across Japanese, European, and U.S. releases, including the long-awaited localized versions of the unreleased Super Bomberman 4 and 5, including boss rush mode to time attack against all the bosses in each title, supports functions, libraries, and more. Jacob, what is Super Bomberman Collection?
So, Bomberman, for those who aren't familiar with the character, is this classic, you know, video game character. It's been around since like NES days. And you're in this maze and you have like, it's a maze with a bunch of soft walls, and your character and your enemies have the ability to lay bombs. And what you try to do is you either try to destroy your enemies, because when bombs are dropped, they blow up in like kind of like a cross kind of shape. You know, like, two squares to the left and right, two squares up and down, something like that. So you either just try to destroy them outright, or you try to trap them by dropping bombs all over the map. And at the same time, you also have to be careful that you don't, you know, you don't fuck yourself over, which I'm not going to lie, happens to me more often than I'd care to admit. With this series, I don't want to say like it's kind of like a Mega Man-ish kind of thing, but like there's all of these other bomber people that you have to fight against, and like you're playing all these levels. Eventually there's like a boss kind of thing, and then you're and then there's like a final one, and then hooray, you've beaten the single player campaign. Some of these do have cutscenes. One of them doesn't. I want to say it's 2, I think. But the real fun part of Bomberman, I mean, single player, yeah, it's fun, but it's really meant to be a party game.
Yeah.
And so it was fun introducing my kids into this game, because it was equal parts, you know, being devious and, you know, wrecking our stuff. But at the same time, like griefing each other. So, needless to say, my youngest was not the biggest fan of this, because the oldest was constantly trapping him. And of course there's as a parent, like, you know, what are you going to do? Cause you're also trying to kill both of them too. So there are 5 games in the Super Bomberman series. Two of them were unreleased in the US, and that's because it was the end of the Super Nintendo, and here comes the Nintendo 64, and they were just some of the last titles. But also Hudson Soft, I believe, had gone out of business at that point, and so they just didn't get brought stateside. Along with the fact that the Super Nintendo was dying. So that's really cool. For those of us who never got to play them, I mean, I never got to play any of these games before. So this was a nice experience. And then also it throws in the first 2 games as well. It's a really fun collection, and it's like, it's really cool that this got brought in. And much like a lot of like the older, or the collections of like older games, there's also a quite sizable art gallery and promo gallery that's attached to this. So you can get to see all sorts of design docs related to the Super Bomberman series. So yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, I'm not going to lie, like the titles don't really differentiate themselves that much, except for like, you know, the boss characters, and obviously the visuals do get better as the series progresses. But
did you play with your kids?
Yeah, I told you. I played with both of them.
Did you blow the hell out of both of them? Or are you like, kids, daddy's going to kick the hell out of you. It's done. It's over.
No.
I'm going to bomb you.
I would like to say that, you know, oh yeah, totally whipped my kids every single time. Nah, they beat me as much as I beat them. No, I wouldn't say a lot.
A lot. Like so much.
Not like I'd constantly, say like a third of the time.
Constant.
Third.
Nonstop.
I had like a 66% win rate.
Sure you did.
But yeah.
So this comes with what, 7 games, 5 Super Nintendo, yep, and 2 on the NES.
Right. Yeah. As I said, it's the 5 Super Bomberman titles, 3 of which were released in the US, 2 were not. So they got localized for the first time, and then you get the first 2 games as well, which I throw in as a nice bonus.
Good amount of games for one tiny little package. $20 on this one. What are your thoughts on the Super Bomberman collection?
Honestly, like, I mean, if you're already a fan of the series, this is a great buy. But if this is like also going to be your first introduction to it, this is also a great entry point into it. I mean, you get the originals, but you also get the entire Super Bomberman series. And honestly, I like the Super ones more than the NES ones. Like, it had a nice visual 16-bit pop to it. That's honestly, I don't know. You just, I realize that this is a no-duh statement, but it's just like you just don't see that kind of stuff anymore.
Yeah.
Like that kind of quality to it. The only downside to this collection is that it doesn't include Bomberman X-Zero, the most superior Bomberman game of all time.
They weren't going to include that in this, and you know it.
No, it's its only fault.
Here's a bunch of Super Nintendo games. Here's an Xbox 360 game that doesn't match at all.
And nobody liked except me.
You don't even like it. You're lying.
Actually, I did.
Into the world.
I did like it. My only issue with it is that you can't save.
All right. 20. Verdict.
$20. Totally. Absolutely.
Cool. Next up, Fighting Fantasy Classics Volume 1, developed and published by Tin Man Games. It released February 5th on the Switch for $14.99. Ready your sword, pack your provisions, and prepare to embark upon nostalgic quests of epic proportions where you choose what happens next. Journey a magical realm, fighting monsters and unraveling mysteries in the Fighting Fantasy Classics text-based role-playing adventures remastered. Originally presented by Steve Jackson and Ian Livingstone in the 80s and 90s, Fighting Fantasy Classics brings these timeless tales back to your gaming library. Bree, what is going on in Fighting Fantasy Classics Volume 1?
First, a little history. You just mentioned Fighting Fantasy is originally a book series from the 80s and 90s by Steve Jackson and Ian Livingstone, two of the founding members who created Games Workshop, which is probably now best known for Warhammer 40K. The company started out making wooden board games like Nine Men Morris and Mancala, and importing things like Dungeons & Dragons into the UK. I should note at this point that this is not the same Steve Jackson in the US who also made games like GURPS and Munchkin. Two different people. So, famous in the gaming space, two different people. This
What's
is
the relation British... to Percy Jackson?
Not at all. Okay. All right.
Michael Jackson?
The fighting... No. No. Yeah. The Fighting Fantasy series of books were single-player text-based role-playing games like Choose Your Own Adventure stories for adults, with added role-playing elements like dice rolling. Despite the name Fighting Fantasy, not all the books were fantasy. Some were sci-fi, horror, superheroes, post-apocalyptic stories, and stuff like that as well. And this is, to me, a release that is about game preservation in a different way than we usually mean it here on the show, and I love it. I love games history, whether it's video games, board games, card games, or whatnot. I'm a gamer, full stop. Seeing classic role-playing game being brought back in the digital space feels like a preservation technique in that it brings it to a whole new audience 40-ish years later. God, that's a long time. if some of this name or games sound familiar to you, Tin Man Games also published The Warlock of Firetop Mountain, one of the games in this collection, on Switch in 2018. And a similar addition to this collection is available on PC in places like Steam. But now we have a part of that collection adapted for Switch. The UI is great for Switch. You can swipe with your finger. There are great sound effects for flipping the pages, crackling firelight, dice rolling, tavern chatter, other things you'd expect to hear in a good fantasy environment, helping bring this to life. There's also a good epic score to this game that heightens during combat scenes and stuff like that. The page is definitely designed for the Switch screen. I did not try this on the TV with the dock because despite my need to stream Earthbound for Joe, I've not managed to get my dock hooked up to my capture card on the small TV yet. Anyway,
for shame.
There are four books in this collection, and I'm assuming if this does well on Switch, we'll get collection two with another four books like the one in the PC version, because I think there are eight total in that version. You'll also find a rules book and a history book in this collection. Being a lover of games history, I think I like the history book as much as I like the games themselves. So really quick, the four books are The Citadel of Chaos, which is a fantasy story with a bit of horror. Starship Traveler, clearly the title here suggests that it's a sci-fi adventure, and it is. The Warlock of Firetop Mountain, which is the one I fully played at least twice. It's classic fantasy, and The Forest of Doom is another fantasy. When you start a book, you get three difficulty options. Adventurer, which is the way the game was intended to be played. You get a nice little skill starting bonus. Hardcore Hero is the other mode, where your starting stats are a little less, but you get unlimited bookmarks. I guess you get unlimited bookmarks in Adventurer mode. And then there's free read mode, which is kind of like cheater mode, they call it. You still roll a character and get your stats, but you get extra skills, like a rewind button if you make a mistake and want to back up and make a completely different choice. You get a free choice button where you unlock all possible links on a page, and a heal button that'll heal you anytime so that you don't run into stamina. And I've said all that. Now I got to actually explain how the game works. Once you've sorted your difficulty, you roll dice to create your character. There are three stats: stamina, which covers your health and survivability; skill, which represents like your fighting ability; and luck, which controls like magic and general luck. Sometimes it's used as a fighting stat, which is pretty cool. You also get to choose a potion to take with you. One for each of your stats is available, and will refill that respective stat with fortune, though, it gives you an additional luck point. I went with that in most of my runs. I thought that was really helpful. Then you choose equipment. You start off with basic things, and you occasionally earn things throughout your run. But you get, in the fantasy ones, you get, a sword and a shield and leather armor. And you have food and drink. And a lantern, really basic adventurer equipment. Once you've got all that, you dive into the Choose Your Own Adventure novel and read on. In the books, you'll find helpful artwork, which you can also view later in a gallery. And then once you're in the game, you have a bar at the bottom of your screen that gives you quick access to home screen, character sheet, bookmarks, map, and settings. Like any Choose Your Own Adventure book, you'll get choice points like turn west and then go to page 71 versus turn east and go to page 278. Some of your choices will lead to dice rolls that are affected by your stats, like rolling two dice for your skill, and that will determine which choice you go to for your results page. So you might seemingly succeed at a challenge, but still end up losing some stamina points. You can always check your stats with your character sheet. If you're just reading the original book, you'd have a pair of D6 with you, but the game does that for you. So you press the dice roll in the page, and it brings up two dice on the screen using a random dice roller, and then it selects the option, so you can now choose stuff based on whether you rolled good or bad. You don't even need to do math. It's great. You just select the page and read on. The map is also helpful in that you can bounce around if you've played this adventure before. You can see previous choices you made and make different ones. Combat's pretty basic. For the most part, you roll plus your stats, and if it's higher than the enemy, you win damage. If it's lower, they do damage to you. If you tie, it's a miss for both. You can also sometimes use your luck, like I mentioned, in combat for special actions, and you can sometimes escape from fights. And then there are other items you might need to find, like keys to open doors. It's really complicated and really simple all at the same time. To sum up, this was good and tactile with a fantastic user interface for the Switch. It was a good piece of role-playing game history preserved, brought to life in a digital format that I think was really well suited to it. The collection of books they chose for this have a good variety to them. I love this collection, and I think you will too.
Very good. How many books total is there?
So there's four in this one, plus the rule book and the history book, which the history book is kind of some of the stuff I was touching on at the beginning, some of which I just Googled and some of which I found little tidbits in the history book, which was pretty cool.
Very good. Well, $15. What do you think?
This is absolutely a buy it for me at this price. You can't get the original books at that price. I'm really looking forward to the rest of this collection. I hope that there's a collection too, so we can get the whole thing that they've done so far. And if you can't wait or prefer PC, please go check this out on Tin Man Games on Steam too. This was a really cool collection.
Very good. Next up, Heart of the Forest, developed by Trap Predator. Aw, Preddy's trapped. Where is she, in the couch? Oh, that's the developer. Published by Wales Interactive, released February 12th on Xbox One, Series, Xbox PC, Switch, Switch 2, PS4, PS5, and PC for $12.99. On an ill-fated hiking trip through the Black Forest, a mismatched group of students fall under the spell of a vengeful spirit trapped deep in the woods. Now they must fight for their survival while trying to escape its corrupting influence. Haunted by fear, trauma, and secrets of the past, each character is pushed to their breaking point, and their survival depends on your choices in this interactive psychological horror story by Trapped Predator. Bree, Jacob, both you covered this. Who wants to start talking about what my cat made?
I have been wanting to talk about this game all week, so I'm totally good for it. So this is an FMV, or interactive movie game, full motion video. You get to make choices based on what you choose. You'll see different footage, making each run of your movie experience different. Sometimes you'll see the same scenes to make it to a certain point. But like once you've completed your first viewing, you can skip scenes you've already seen. So that helps secondary runs go a little faster. This takes place from several people's perspective in a group of students. They're meeting up to go on a hiking trip in the Black Forest in Germany. We have Laura, who isn't from Germany, nor does she speak anything in German other than and literally the words a little bit. Her girlfriend, Anna, acts as a translator for her. And then we have the two guys, Nick and Simon, and they speak really good English, so that makes it easy for us as viewers. Simon is their most experienced hiker, and that's kind of how their group starts out. It has a full cinematic opening with credits, and after some exposition introducing our characters meeting up in a small town, we can see someone like running through the forest earlier than that. And like escapes to a cave to be captured by some unknown force. And then our hikers, when they're gathering and introducing themselves, they are met with like a missing person poster. And there's like a strange memorial near the entrance to the forest outside town. All these like, you know, little things that are obviously like foreshadowing to what's going to happen when you walk into the strange woods in Germany. And they agree to stay together. But of course, that doesn't last.
Oh my God, no way.
Shortly into the movie, Simon goes off to take a leak, and then he finds a spooky cave with some bones in it, and then they all get separated from each other at different points or meet up with other lost hikers. They reunite, they find dead people stabbed with strange knives that may, in fact, be people seemingly very much alive in other parts of the forest. And yeah, the goal of the game is to get as many of your people out of the forest as possible, But that seems impossible because there is something malevolent in the forest that plays with your mind. It can take the form of other people, it can make fictitious phone calls, and there are people leaving handprints everywhere. It's pretty cool. And I don't want to give away the endings, because at least the first time you play, there's a pretty good mystery to this story that unfolds slowly and with excellent suspense. Following the different characters imparts different aspects of the story in one compelling story experience. Like, it's got good horror elements, but don't expect a ton of gore or jump scares. This is more about the feeling of being lost, the mystery of the unknown entity dwelling in the forest, and this is more about the suspense or psychological horror, in my opinion.
I was going to say, it's definitely more, it's more about the atmosphere.
Yeah. And
this game really does it well. Like, honestly, this is probably the most beautiful game, like, and also ugly game that that Wales Interactive has made. The visuals are
I'll give my opinion on that here in a second. I just want to note some important settings because that was the next thing in my notes. I was really happy to see that there was a streamer mode where choices are paused. It had the ability to adjust subtitle size, background and text colors, or even turn them off. And it has a story tree, so you can see choices you made in previous runs. Yay!
Always helpful.
But yeah, film quality and props and effects were fantastic.
Oh my god, the bog witch thing, like, or forest witch thing. Oh god, the fingers.
Continuity was done really well, especially with regards to makeup and dirt. They did a lot with a little in terms of scares. With a name like Heart of the Forest, you really need to have the forest be a character, and I think they found some great places to film, like rocks and caves and swaths of forest. Music and sound effects were done beautifully. Lighting was a key element during the daytime, as well as the night scenes or cave scenes. And I feel like they really managed to balance, like, flashlights and cell phone lights, as well as distance lighting from the moon, and still keep it realistically dark and spooky. There were some times where the compression felt a little sketchy, but only a few times did I really notice it. There were a couple of times where the dark seemed a tiny bit pixelated in the way that games can do sometimes. They didn't take me out of the experience. Those are, like, the slightest, most minimal knocks, but they were enough that I noticed them to mention. And you are, as I mentioned, trying to keep your people alive. One element to pay attention to is what they call corruption from the forest, and it has levels. So for each character, the game will let you know when you switch to them, whether it's, like, low or medium at these different intervals as they appear between character viewpoints and stuff when they switch up. My quick summary, I guess, of the game at this point is that it mostly takes place in the Black Forest. The writing was great. The acting was pretty damn good. Some of the story elements were predictable, especially when it comes to choice points, but that's, like, a little bit to be expected to me. Like, how else are you gonna know to make a good decision? Like, choosing to confront the bad guy versus playing along is likely to end in trouble. And you can kind of predict some of that. You have to be able to, though, or it's not gonna work, you know, for progression. Jacob, more thoughts?
Like, honestly, you covered everything really well. Like, this, I mean, I don't want to say, like, plot-wise, it's not my favorite, because I'm not exactly into horror stuff, but, like, this, oh, God, this thing was creepy, and, like, this is definitely one that you want to play, like, in the dark or low-level lighting, if possible. But I do appreciate, like, just how, like, it weaved all the different character stories in pretty well, and there was just, like, enough, like, stuff in there to keep me wanting to see what's going on next, but also, you know, doing its job and creeping me out. And that's really a hard balance. And honestly, I'd be curious if they filmed, like, an actual film, like, with all of this instead of just the FMV stuff. Because it seems fleshed out enough.
I feel like I saw an article that was talking about this, and I didn't read the whole article, of course, but something I saw in passing, basically, that it was more of a film company that decided to make a game than it was making an FMV game from a game perspective, was kind of the impression I got from the article. So, yeah.
Yeah, they did a hell of a job. Like,
yeah, I would say this is honestly one of the best FMV games I've played in a while. While it was a very different tone of game, I would put this up there with ones like the Isletide Hotel or the Gallery in terms of film and storytelling. That's kind of high compliment. I mean, I can't put it up there with like Immortality, but this was a pretty solid game. Runtime is a couple really hours for a playthrough. This is a full length film, basically, and it kept me engaged fully during my viewing experience. Like, there were at least three endings, a few variations on how to get there. That'll have people survive or not to a certain degree. Like, it's a solid game.
All right. Yeah. $13. Need a verdict.
Are you serious?
Absolutely.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, once you say it, like, and I think about it, it's like, oh yeah, that's usually how much Wheels Interactive titles cost. But like, oh my God, $13, totally worth it. Mm-hmm. This is like, you spend that much on a movie ticket. Like,
yeah,
this is way better than most of the shit that's out there right now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think I'm going to start a new rule where if Jacob doesn't know what the price is, he's not allowed to review it.
Wait, but I would have already reviewed it, though.
But you didn't give your final verdict.
Oh, I said,
like, I'll make you do all the work, but I won't let you have the final word because you don't pay attention to when I say the price at the beginning. Well, like, how much is it? I'm not telling.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I could still have a final word on it. Like, no. I'll still talk. What are you going to do? Edit it out?
Yes.
You know that they're no. Like, the game companies are going to be like, "Wait, what did you say?" Like, shut the fuck up, bitch. Ain't
nobody ask you shit. Next game, Locked in My Darkness 2, The Room, developed by Blusagi Team, published by Indie.io, released February 11th on Steam for $8.99. Locked in My Darkness 2, The Room is a first-person psychological horror game that places you in the shoes of a Japanese high school student who recently moved with her parents to a modest apartment in New York, but their attempt at a fresh start is shattered as the sins of the past refuse to remain hidden. And something dark begins to awaken within the walls of their new home. Aki, what is going on in Locked in My Darkness 2, The Room?
Okay. And this, you play as a young girl who's on her way home from school. And apparently there are cop cars that are, you know, placed in the alleyway in a way that's physically not possible. So she's like, okay, I need to find a new way home, I guess. And instead of just exiting, going around like a sensible human being, she decides to go through some underground areas that she's not supposed to be in, and it turns out there's some sort of crazy killer out on the loose. It ends up this becomes a puzzle game where, you know, you have to go find codes and other pieces of stuff to hook things up and open different doors so you can get through to the next area. And eventually there's a zombie thing that walks up and starts smacking the shit out of you until you die over and over and over and over and over again. And I don't know how the game ends because I got stuck in a part. There's a couple issues with the game, major ones in my opinion. First and foremost, there is a flashlight that you get at some point, somewhere, eventually. I played for hours and all I had was a lighter. Would you like to know how much of a dark ass room a lighter lights up? The answer is fucking none of it. So this game, you might as well be playing in pitch black because you're not going to find half of anything because you can't see anything. So, yeah.
I'm wondering how hard it is to find a flashlight because, like, the playtime is 2 to 3 hours.
And I've put like 3 hours into it, and I don't think I'm even halfway through it. Fine.
No, oh, and man. I can just imagine you in like a dark room in the real world, in a dark room with a flashlight in the middle of the room and you walking around the walls trying to feel things.
I wouldn't need to. I can see in the dark. It would have to be excessively dark for me not to see it. So you can't see anything in the dark, and I couldn't find a flashlight, so yay. Unless you're like 2 inches away from a wall, the flash or the lighter just ain't doing shit. And then a bunch of the buttons weren't working because fuck me, why would they ever work? There's supposed to be a jump button, which is a space bar. That didn't work. There's supposed to be a crouch button, the left control button. That didn't work. So I constantly kept trying to outrun the zombie thing, and it moves faster than you do. So it takes a couple swipes at you, and you die. And you can't get away from it, and you can't sneak around it, because the guy assumed the crouch button would allow you to sneak past it if the crouch button, you know, fucking worked. So I got stuck there, because you can only go past the zombie a couple times before you die, and it's in a numerous spots throughout this area, and there's no map, and it's very confusing area to try and get through. So I got stuck in there and kept dying, and it reset a lot of progress, and eventually I was like, I'm fucking tired of this, and I quit.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, $9. What do you think of it?
I might have to pass for now, because all this game managed to do was kind of piss me off.
Ouch.
Yeah, they need to put up an update just to fix the buttons so they actually do what they're supposed to do. Then maybe you can sneak past the zombie thing without it turning immediately whacking you, which would be super useful. You know, maybe give us some brightness settings so things aren't just pitch black, because fuck, it is so hard to see any damn thing. Because 90% of this game is set in the dark, so it's just like, if they fix those two things, this might be worthy of like a try it, but as it is now, definitely a deny it.
Alrighty. Well, moving on, next game, Speed Dates. Developed by Icarus Interactive Entertainment, published by Dolores Entertainment. Released February 13th, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $5.99. Embark Speed Dates, where you control first dates with 18 attractive women in this interactive FMV game. Oh, is Aki jealous on this one? She doesn't get to talk about the girls. Aki, are you jealous?
Doesn't sound like it.
Shape your story with charm and humor for a personalized romantic journey. Our main character, Murat, attends the speed date event and only has a few minutes to get to know the women and make him love himself. Try to impress the girls in this adventure where you can experience today's male-female relationships in the most realistic way possible. Bree, Jacob, both of you covered this one. Jacob, how about you start us off on speed dates? How often did you get rejected?
There were like, I don't know. I'd say like maybe like a fourth of the women. Like, so, so in this game, you're playing as this guy who like goes down to this like, cafe that his friend is running. And they're like, oh, we need like another guy for the speed dating thing. Come on. Like, you know, I'll cover you. Like, you know, you can just go in there for a couple hours and have some fun, blah, 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 blah. So that sets it up. And then it's just you talking to all these women for like 5 to 8 minutes a pop. And you're having conversations about different stuff. Like, what do they do for a living? How do they feel about certain things? Like, what's going on in their life? Like, what do they care about? And meanwhile, like, your guy is giving, you know, his answers on this stuff, and it keeps flitting back and forth between like a third person view for the women. Like, you're viewing it like catty corner from like the other table. And then when he's talking, it's in this, like, you're in the seat that the woman's currently occupying. And so it kind of gets kind like it just gets weird.
So as that you're, really irritated me, and yeah. That's from a film standpoint. I used to work in film, and the sight lines were weird. They have Murat looking straight at the camera when he talks. It's not consistent framing, so he's either sitting too close or too far back or just right. It's just kind of random sometimes.
Yep.
And then the angle view, which is probably more appropriate, has the sight line on where he would be sitting, but... So they're talking off to him, and he's talking at the camera, and that just does not make sense. It was like a huge disconnect for, like, you're supposed to be him talking to the ladies.
Like, I was gonna say, here's my guess what happened. Like, yeah. I think they filmed the dude all at once, and yeah. They filmed the ladies separately, and it was, like, two different teams filming, or, like... They decided to switch formats halfway through or something like that. Like, it just, it doesn't work. And on top of it, there were a lot of the conversations that I was like, it just felt tedious. Now, granted, I've never done a speed dating thing, so I don't know what the experience actually is like, but it was like, I don't know. Media always portrays it as this like really quick thing, like, you know, 3 to 5 minutes. Like tops, but I mean, then again, you know, when you see it in sitcoms and stuff like that, they only have like 2 to 3 minutes to work with to set up that kind of stuff. So I don't know if this was realistic or not, but so many of these conversations were like,
yeah. So like that also was a thing that irritated me, was the way that the questions were asked and what he was saying were like different answers every time. So it basically made Murat seem like a lying scumbag.
He seemed like a douche half the time.
But because there's like one woman will ask questions about like, oh, do you want children? He's like, no, I don't want children, based on like what the woman was saying. But then like later, this woman clearly has her own kids. And you're like, oh, yeah, sure. I'm totally open to other people's kids. And it's like, what?
Well, I mean, I kind of get that. Like, you know, it's just like you're not interested in like producing children. But if
there were other things that he just like clearly would say the opposite answer as an option. And you can just get away with that. So like the choice points were kind of asinine at times.
They didn't always line up to where you think that they would be.
Yeah.
All right. $6 on this one. What do you two think of it?
Well, I have one thing. Like, I think it's coming out tomorrow, but as of current, it's not connected to Xbox Live services, which is something I'm going to email Dolores about if it doesn't get fixed by the morning. So there's no way to tell if the achievements work or if the cloud saves work or any of that. So I'm hoping that they'll get that sorted quickly. I also just want to add that, like, the game kind of speeds by. If you don't read fast, this will be a tough one because it's only in Turkish language. But the game does pause for choices. There is a pause option.
Which is nice. It's not like a
time. And the overlay will leave the text at the bottom. So, I mean, thankfully I read fast, but there's also no skip once you've seen the dates.
Yep.
I
want
to play this again for other endings. So you just have to sit through all 5 to 8 minutes of the same... basic video chat and like make different dialogue choices, and there's which no I'm like, to remember. Oh,
man. No, thank you.
But there's supposedly like 36 different endings, and there's 18 women you can date, and there's like 8 hours of footage with an average run of being like, I don't know, an hour or two. So yeah, it's priced low.
There's a lot of beef there. It's only $6.
That's the thing.
Like quality wise, it's not at the level of Whales, but it's not at the price level.
It's not a bad game. It's just not a good FMV. Like, it's not bad, but it's not good either. And especially when I had another FMV this week to play that was absolutely fucking excellent. Like, I would say I can give this a try at that price, assuming that they sort out their issue with Xbox Live services.
I'm guessing that'll be fixed in the morning, because we see that a lot with pre-release. Yeah.
I'm in agreement about the try it rating. Like, the thing is that for $6, yeah, it's worth it. But you know, there's so many other FMVs that if you pay another $6 for, aka, you know, $10 or more, like there's way better ones on Xbox. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jacob just ended on a like, and I thought there was more coming. Like,
no. Nah.
Final game to talk about, Centipede Gun, developed by Mateus K2M, published by Cubite Interactive, released February 12th, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $4.99. Centipede Gun is a creature-building roguelite-inspired by games like SNKRX and Florp, where you create unusual beings by combining different shapes, modules, and weapons? Try out insane combinations and try to break the game with the craziest creations. Each combination offers new possibilities to defeat enemies in increasingly challenging battles. After each round, use the money you earn to buy different units in the store and further strengthen your centipede of destruction. But be careful, as you evolve, enemies also become stronger, testing the limits of your creativity and strategy. Jacob, tell us about your time in the Human Centipede Gun.
So Centipede Gun is a roguelite where, so many of these that I've played in the game, it's just like, you're given a list of like, okay, these are all the powers that you have. Like, here's like a little shot of your inventory. This one, you're making modifications to your body and you can decide like which way certain stuff is going to go. Which I'm not going to lie, like, when you're starting this game, it's hell trying to figure out what that, like, what exactly you want to do with this. Because it's not like it's not hard to survive, like, the early rounds and, like, you know, make a decent dent and figuring out what your powers are going to be. Like, I mean, for the most part, it's an auto shooter, but you can have, like, you can have turrets added to your body. You can have like a thing that will throw turrets like onto the level. You can have a cannon strapped to your body. You can have a thing which makes it so coins fall more often, or like a knife that circles around like over your head or whatever. It, like, there's all sorts of stuff that you can do in terms of passive and you know, attacking abilities. And like, the big thing with it is figuring out how you're going to balance it, which I know, like, with all these kind of games, that's like a no duh, but you now also have to worry about how you're going to balance it physically, because you're moving this little centipede guy, and he doesn't turn all too hot. And so, like, you're, it could get really tough as like, you're trying to move your guy forward, but then also like turn left so you can like come about and like fire more shots at the guy. But also, like, as you're adding these different powers to the body, you're also taking up space, but you also then need to start thinking about like, okay, well, certain powers will amplify other ones, but they need to be like right next to them. So you have to like piece together where certain stuff is going to go. And unfortunately, it's not like you can't just swap stuff on the fly. Like, you, if you're going to get rid of something or move something off, you have to sell it. Which, I mean, yeah, it does bring back some points for you, but then, you know, something that you wish that you could just move, you, like, you know, you now actually have to think about where stuff is going to go. And it really does add a level of difficulty to this game, which I respect. Now, the visuals aren't anything to get excited about, in my opinion. It's very simple. I would guess I would say, like, Flash Arcade-y. It felt like a Newgrounds game from, like, way back in the day. Or kind of like Binding of Isaac, which also was a Newgrounds game. Huh. like, those kind of visuals. So, I mean, it definitely does have its own style, but you're really here for the gameplay more than the visuals on this one. And it's, you know, the only real complaints I have about it is that, it's the same stuff as other standard roguelike. You have to sink a significant amount of time into it to figure out you know, how your strategies are actually going to work. It's like, it's not like, like so many others where it's just like, all right, like no matter what you have, as long as everything's upgraded to the max, you're just going to kick everyone's ass. Like, you could have stuff super upgraded in this game and still have your ass handed to you time and time again. And of course there are permanent upgrades that you could buy, but, that requires like a different kind of currency, which takes longer to earn in this game. And I mean, but then again, you're just playing it more, and it's honestly a pretty addictive game. I enjoyed it.
Very good. It is $4.99. So for a while, oh, wow. $5, what do you think of it?
$5. Absolutely. Definitely.
Very good. And with that, we are done. Yay.
We made it. Hooray.
We did.
Yay.
We did. We are done. That is it for this episode. Big, big thanks to Brent for coming on. Brental Floss for chatting about Use Your Words 2 with us. Big thanks to Glenn Case for coming on and also chatting about Use Your Words, as he is our party game extraordinaire. I don't know, whatever. Big thanks to you, Chuckleflex, for being here. You know, doing what you do.
Lloyd came on earlier too.
Lloyd did his thing for the state of play. Music. I don't know what the plus. No, so maybe something from Brent. I don't play much from Brental Floss because I don't do much with lyrics on here. But I think I'll do something from Brental Floss.
All right.
Sense.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Does anyone have any final words to wrap this up?
Nope.
I'm excited for Boomer Technology. That whole entire thing. Oh, yeah. So we're back to slug fucking again? Awesome.
Hashtag right, yep, slug there we fucking. Go. Yeah, there we go.
Yep, just there you
slug
go.
Slug fucking.
Yep.
You plan to ban a whole religion from our borders, but please tell us all about your dick. You want to reinstate waterboarding and torture, but please tell us all about your dick. Why wouldn't we put our trust in you when clearly every other thing you said was true? I mean, right? You would tank the economy and raise gas prices, but please go on about your dick. You said you want to kill the innocent families of ISIS, but oh, let's fawn about your dick. Why wouldn't we believe that you're large and proud? Especially when you went to the trouble of saying it out loud. Cause that just logically follows key change. The dead founding fathers can't help but toss and turn. But please clarify about your dick. You'd nuke Antarctica just to watch it burn. But please don't deny us all the dick. And when we look back and wonder why the world's on fire underneath the black sky, we'll think as we rummage for food at the dump and realize it started with President Trump. But please tell us all and don't forget to elaborately describe your balls. Yes, please tell us all about your dick. It's short and it's skinny and it looks like a stick.